Play podcast, your first, only, greatest, Stroop Womphalist.
Hold on. Is there any left?
One left about games and Japan and games in Japan. Kind of dug my way out of that one. I am your host, Mark Gamages McDonald. We are man down this episode, but we will soldier on.
I think we'll survive somehow.
We'll make it work. John Riccardi is
on vacation.
On vacation.
Yeah. Is he taking some time off?
Is he though?
He has a new job, and that job is taking pictures
yes!
of shit.
I'm so
owns.
Glad you brought that up.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, he does that every year, doesn't he?
Yeah. That is the only reason he goes
12
home.
Hours a day for a week, basically.
You would think he had run out of stuff to take pictures of in his house, but no. He's on to pins now.
I think it's like he goes to America and he has this whole other pile of stuff to take pictures of.
Like, you do have friends who live online still. Like, your family is alive. No, but follow him on Twitter if you don't already, at JohnTV, to see what we're talking about, because he has tweeted out a bunch of interesting stuff. But more interesting is the stuff that we are going to talk about here on the podcast. So, joining me here from my left, stage right, that is... Graham Trash Dog Howard.
Trash Dog?
Trash Dog.
Oh, okay, yeah.
High school nickname.
Trash Dog.
I came back from the gym, and the guys had already gotten their Super Famicom minis.
I didn't even know there was a story to this. I just thought Trash Dog for Contra.
I think technically that was supposed to be Roy's nickname.
I think that was supposed to be mine.
No, it wasn't. No?
Okay.
Because Roy has his own nickname. Yeah.
Good luck with that.
I mean, as far as I understand it, before I got back, these guys were playing Contra the Alien Wars.
Right.
And Roy was assaulted by the trash dog at the very beginning of the first stage, who's just like munching on some trash in the background and then comes out to attack you.
Yeah. That's right.
Has a purple mohawk.
He's munching on, by the way, you might be hearing the tones of the Super Famicom Mini. Don't adjust your podcast dial. That is the Super Famicom Mini. We have it playing on a tracked mode in the background, so it's going to be cycling through games. But, yes, the infamous alien evil trash dog, which I don't know if you noticed, but he's just a dog sitting there eating the trash, and then when you pass by him, he goes, bleh, and shows this, like, crazy alien face. But then doesn't immediately attack you.
Right.
But then later, he's, like, waiting, biding his time. And you got a little upset about that.
Well, I was surprised is all. And, like, you know, I suck at Contra so bad already.
Yeah.
Like, every time I play it, it's just, like, I have, like, 10 good seconds before I get hit by something. And here's, like, this dog that I was, like, already shooting at, but I couldn't hit because it was apparently not done eating its garbage. Mm. And then once it's done, it's like, oh, I'm going to fuck that guy up.
A hittable object, finally, eventually.
It was, like, a subconscious thing that you didn't want to shoot it while I was eating.
No, I tried.
Well, you shot it while I was eating.
That's why it's subconscious. So you shot at it, but you wouldn't hit it.
I see.
Once he was done, you could finally kill. That's like the inner game logic.
I see.
That is Roy, Revenge of Alf Blakely.
Yes.
Your subtitle for Star Fox 2. The unofficial subtitle for Star Fox 2.
Yeah, I forget. I don't know who that character was, but somebody definitely looked a lot like Alf.
It was Andross. Screen. Yeah, Andross in the title screen.
The title screen of Star Fox 2.
Yeah.
Which, do we want to talk about Star Fox 2 now? We're going to intermingle some impressions. From the Super Famicom Mini.
Before we did that, to unlock Star Fox 2, you have to beat Corneria, the first stage of Star Fox 1.
That's right.
Which is a task I entrusted to Roy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He did a fantastic job.
I've never played it before, by the way.
And herein is Sarah's nickname. Oh. Sarah's Everything's Fucking Triangles,
yes.
Podzorski.
But that was my Star Fox 2. That was my little review.
Well, everything's fucking triangles. Okay. Well, it applies to Star Fox 1 as well. But, so Roy, so you had never played... I didn't know there were all these games. I'm finding out these dark secrets of you guys. I was playing Yoshi's Island, and everyone was like, oh, what's that? What's happening? What's JJ? You haven't played that either.
You know, I've only played, like, the shitty mobile... not mobile, but handheld versions. Yeah.
Well, the GBA, I mean...
that's not a bad version.
It's just got really bad sound.
The first No, the sequels.
Okay. Mm. Yoshi's New Island, for example.
Yeah.
Okay. I wish I have not played for
Can we just
reason,
be impressed that I've played this game? Me.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Yes. This is a first for me. So let's just revel in that for a little bit.
Just let that soak
in. I have played Yoshi's Island.
Yeah. So who all bought a Super Famicom Mini here, by the way?
Four of us. John's arrived in the mail.
Okay.
John has both.
Masa, Justin, and I all got ours at Yamada Denki.
Okay, and tell me your story. Just finished rounding up. Well, actually, this will go into your story.
Sure.
So that is JJ Super Panic Com at percent.
What?
All right, just tell your story.
It'll
make sense.
My story
is
mostly I was just getting off the train at Shibuya, mm-hmm. and I was checking my Twitters. And then I saw a tweet from Masa saying that I'm in line waiting for Super Famicom Mini.
Yeah.
So I tweeted at him being like, where? And he's like, I'm at Yamada's. So off I went.
Kind of the shitty, nobody goes to kind of last in line place. I mean, it makes sense.
Everybody always forgets Yamada Denki.
Kind of the Circuit City of Japanese electronics. Let's put it that way.
A Radio Shack, yeah.
Yeah, maybe, well.
But still in business.
Radio Shack, yeah. But yeah, so you got a ticket?
Yeah, they just had them. None of us had reservations. So I just walked upstairs to the top floor. It was on the 6th, and I saw Masa. I was like, hey, Masa. He was like, that dude's handing out tickets. So I went and grabbed a ticket, and that was it. That's the whole story.
Okay.
For me, anyway.
Like, do you know what number you were?
I was 85.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, seems like everybody should have believed in Reggie. Seems like there was ample stock.
It definitely seems that way from the Japanese launch, definitely.
The big camera. In Shibuya, got 300 of them.
Right.
Yeah.
And I saw everybody got one.
Mm-hmm. Everybody that signed up for the raffle got it.
Right.
Yeah.
So everyone won the raffle. So is it really a raffle?
But they only
all got it.
But they had the raffle at 8 in the morning. So if you showed up at 10, you couldn't get one.
Okay. Yeah. And they were gone. My local neighborhood shop, I was like, well, I'll just stop in here just to see. Mm. It was sold out. Something interesting I noticed while I was there, the Famicom Mini, the NES Mini. So it sells for new, I think it's like 5,800 yen.
That's right, yeah.
And it sells used for 5,600 yen.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
So it sells like a $1.50 less used or new. It's like that thing is still fairly sought after. But so JJ, did you get it from the same place?
Yeah, so my story, I experienced the prequel to Graham's story. In that when I got to Shibuya, I darted over to Big Camera. And as I was walking there, friend of the show, Alex Aniel,
that's right.
Like, sped past me. And, I recognized him from, like, behind, because his hair is, like, he's very unique.
Very spiky.
And I was like, oh, hey, Alex, I bet we're doing the same thing. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get my Super Famicom Mini. So I go in there with him, Big Camera. We wait in line. And I get called first. And then the guy's like, oh, you didn't come at 8 o'clock to get a bracelet to get, you know, the raffle or whatever, and I'm like, no. And he's
wait,
like,
how was he calling you? If
well, no, because there was just a line.
Raffle number.
There was no information about having having to have been there for the raffle or whatever.
Yeah,
and like I'm like, oh well, I didn't fucking go to Shibuya at 8 o'clock in the morning to fucking get a Super Famicom Mini or whatever, and so I didn't get one. Alex got one, but as I was getting explained what happened by the big guy, I turn around and Masa's there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I told Masa, I'm like, well, you had to be here for the thing. I don't know. We couldn't get it. And he was like, okay, I'll go to Don Quixote. And so Masa goes to Don Quixote, which we had heard was going to get a whole bunch that you could just do, like, you could just walk up and buy.
Right. I talked to Masa. He said that the donkey guy was like, what the fuck are you talking about? No, we don't have it.
Yeah.
What do you think? You could just walk in here at 10:30 in the morning and buy one? You crazy person.
So he didn't get one there, and he went to Yamada Denki, and he told me that he got one.
Right.
And so I went over there with Sarah.
Gotcha.
And then so we're waiting in line. And
Masa got his
because he got here there before anyone else.
Yep.
And then like maybe four people before Graham was gonna get his, and me and Sarah were only like two people behind him. Like it took like maybe 15 minutes before the next person got called, and then they like eventually come over and they're like, the registers are broken.
All of them?
Just on that floor in the game area.
Okay.
And
was
so,
there only
like,
one?
There was two.
Weird.
There were three, actually.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah, there were three.
Okay.
And he was like, you need to come back later.
Or you could wait.
Or you could wait. But he didn't know when they would be fixed.
Yeah.
Whoa. Okay.
And so I'm like, well, can't you just take the Super Famicom Minis to another register?
Yeah. Somewhere else in the
shop. In the store. It's a fucking sixth floor giant electronics store. The biggest in Shibuya.
Right. It was pretty empty. It was really empty.
It was really empty. Because it's fucking 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah, on a fucking random ass Thursday. Yeah. Like, yeah.
And he's like, no, it would cause a panic among all the other customers.
Like, how
were
people waiting in line? Mm. Is that what he was talking about?
He just said,
we were kind of dragging JJ away at this point, because JJ was, like, getting ready to fight
JJ's
this guy.
JJ's was up,
And we're like, come on, JJ, let's just...
That's why you're super panic-com, JJ. You're trying to cause a panic.
Yeah, well, okay. I guess that's what causes a panic
so
in Japan.
So what did you do?
I mean, there was nothing I could do.
Did you just wait?
I just came back during lunch and got it.
Oh.
Yeah, like, we were total opposites on this issue, because, like, I was talking to the guy first, and he was like, you can either wait, or you can just come back and pick it up later. It's like, I'll just do that then, okay.
I'll just do which?
I'll come back later.
Oh, because
it doesn't matter when I pick it up, because it's as good as a reservation as
so
at that point.
So that's the question.
Yeah.
As long as you have the ticket, guaranteed one.
Right, which you were. Like, as long as we had the ticket, like, it's fine. So
you
like,
just
okay.
didn't want to come back.
The problem is, yes, I don't want to come back.
Yeah. Customer service.
Well, yeah, you fucking problem solving.
And it's
common
a little
sense.
Weird. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a little weird. Like, it is like 15-minute walk
from here. And it's annoying that they made us wait for that long.
Right.
Without, like, saying anything.
Right. Where I'm sure he was very super apologetic.
No, really? Not as much as I hoped he would be.
There wasn't even a bow. That is not what?
Not even a bow.
Okay, yeah, that's not very Japanese.
There was a really nervous looking girl though at the counter.
Yeah. She was like, oh, we don't
trying to not make eye contact with us as we're like aggressively looking at her.
Yeah.
She's like, I broke
But it was
it.
Great.
I'm
she was she was looking over the shoulders of the two dudes at the register who were trying to fix it, like her two coworkers.
Yeah.
And it looked like she was trying not to laugh.
Because
just like she's looking at these two dudes, like I'm gonna fix this, and it's like, oh my god, nothing happened.
I felt really bad for the guy who was stuck there at the register because he looked honestly really shady.
The guy at the register,
for a Japanese guy,
for a Japanese guy
like, he looked pretty shady,
very shady. He was like in a cheap ass suit,
and he kept giving us weird looks.
Yes.
He was giving a side eye.
But it turns out probably just because he was really nervous because it all broke, and he was like, oh god, everybody thinks I broke it.
We thought he was gonna buy them all.
Right.
We thought he was like, give me all your.
He did look like he could. Be capable of.
So describe, I am curious, describe the other clientele, the other people who were in line that can be in line at like 11 a.m. during work hours.
They just like meandered away.
No, but describe the like
they're
the
like
demographic.
Us. They're nerdlingers.
The woman behind us was like a little bit older.
Yeah.
Nerdy. She had like
guys and girls.
Guys in flannels. Yeah, there were guys and girls,
But mostly like what age level? I'm just curious, were they mostly people
oldsters? Yeah. I mean, it was not some
in their 40s,
Sarah
30s.
Was easily the youngest person.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I saw other dudes that probably looked like they were my age, like probably like late 20s.
Okay.
Yeah.
No college kids and
no kids.
Interesting.
Kids, no.
Huh. Okay.
Interesting. Of course, I mean they would have been in school. So.
Yeah, it's Japan. Yeah.
What? It's fucking Japanese. It's Japan.
Sure.
Japanese college. Like, come on, nobody goes to class. Does anybody know what they're selling for online here right now? It's always a good judge.
I saw an article saying that they're selling for less than NES minis were being sold.
Well,
online.
I'm sure on that because the supply is way way better.
Yeah,
but they also went back into stock briefly. So they were actually like on Amazon. You could buy them again for a while this morning, and then
really?
So they dropped down like as low as like. Like Ichiman, like $100, and then they started like going back up a bit. I think they're at like 1.2 now.
Hmm.
But yeah, no, it's not nearly anything compared to what the NES Mini was.
Right.
Which is fine. I mean, I think they should do a better job with stock.
The fact that we were able to walk in and buy one, even though it was like convoluted
I am,
and stupid.
Yeah, very, very surprised and impressed that you guys were able to. Okay, so moving on to the thing itself.
No, right, triangles.
You guys hooked it up to all those fucking triangles. you guys hooked it up. When I came in, you were already playing it. What was the first game, the first like go-to?
I was out, so I don't know these guys.
We played Contra because when we got the NES Mini...
You made Roy play Contra.
Right. And it was really fun. It was really fun to play Contra with Roy.
You could play two players, too. You wanted to play something...
It's like... we can get into this later. One thing I'm not a big fan of is the lack of two-player cooperative at the same time games on this system, but... That was the one thing that we could play two-player cooperative. It was like a known entity that, like, you know, it would just be chaos. And
there's that. There's Tetris Attack.
Yeah, but like
Tetris
puzzle games
is not co-op.
Game. Puzzle games are.
But like,
hard to...
I think for co-op games, off the top of my head, I mean, there is Kirby Superstar, which you can play two-player.
But not from
also,
the beginning, right?
Yeah, you can.
You can.
Oh,
as soon as you get your first power up, you can hit the A button, and then your power up turns into whatever that character is.
But you can like take them from the world.
I see.
So Graham was like too close to me, and if I pressed the wrong button, I would like eat him, and he would just disappear.
Yeah. And there's also The Legend of the Mystical Ninja is also a two-player co-op.
Right.
Yeah. So that one was really fun.
That was probably like everyone's favorite game. I think.
Mario Kart's in. The, I mean,
Mario Kart's in the co-op.
Yeah, we played
right?
Mario Kart and game. The Mode 7 just does not hold up.
Yeah, so that was something that we can talk about. There, I noticed a couple interesting things. We were trying to parse like if this was done. If this is just the nature of now that it's outputting on HDMI and whatever, but even in the different settings, some things look a little weird, like the recharge stations in F-Zero, I noticed. I
think, if you don't have scan lines on those, they're always going to look harsh.
That's what it is, I guess. It's the
so, I mean, I think if you had
lines.
The CRT filter on, I think that effect wouldn't be as bad. But if you're playing on 4x3 or Pixel Perfect, it's gonna look pretty bad.
I gotta say, I'm not usually like a scan line guy, but I think I would lean towards it. Like, even with games like Final Fantasy VI.
Yeah,
seeing the art and seeing it in scanline and then trying it with the Pixel Perfect.
One thing that we mentioned when we were playing it was that Justin mentioned that he'd like more options for scanlines, which I do agree with, because like at home I have a Super Nintendo setup with a FrameMeister, and it gives you a lot more control over exactly how... Like, I feel like the CRT filter on this one is kind of overbearing. Like, it's very much, here are some thick-ass scanlines.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of, you know, there were many degrees of it, and I think that's not quite what it would look like, but... It's pretty good. It's a pretty good approximation, I feel like.
On the more positive side, I did notice the... Oh, and you guys were saying Mario Kart looked like a mess, right?
Yeah, I didn't see it, so I'm not sure.
But. It was really... just like... Yeah, you couldn't tell what's... It was just like garbage.
And that was
mess.
Because you had... Which mode were you in?
We were in 4x3 mode.
You were in 4x3, not Pixel Perfect?
No.
Okay. On the more positive side, I did notice... I was excited about this. So the opening scenes of Final Fantasy VI... The
very
when they're in the Magic Tech the
Magic Tech armor
the mechs basically overlooking the cliffs there at the start, you can actually see the town,
little houses in the side of the mountain.
You can see the little like built into the mountain in the background, and they're talking about that as they're up there, but I just assume they were looking over. So it's like,
because when you're playing that on a CRT,
actually see it.
Yeah, one thing about the emulation on this thing, I mean, it's a great little device, but like one of the quirks is that it runs on the bright side.
Right.
So I mean, the brightness is turned up a little bit, and if you're playing on a CRT, it's a lot darker and it's a lot fuzzier. So like, I was never able to make out the houses in there, so I always assumed that like they were standing on this cliff, looking out in the distance at Narsh off screen.
Yeah.
Not that it was actually like down there in the mountains.
Exactly. And I think part of that is just TVs are. Prider.
It
now,
could be
right?
it. Yeah.
I mean, that's just a default thing. But in some games definitely hold up way better than others, obviously.
Yeah. But I feel like with this collection of 21 games, like, there's a lot of them that are like great on there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, we were playing at Yoshi's Island earlier. Yep. I mean, Super Metroid
that
is on there.
Super holds up. But
Mario
both
World
those
is
games
on there.
Graphically
like,
and all. I mean, they all pretty much all hold up gameplay wise. We talk about Star Fox 2 maybe separately, but they pretty much all hold up gameplay wise. Graphically,
yeah.
It's one of those things where you get an image in your head of how it was, and Mario RPG, which I was like, oh, I'm gonna definitely replay Mario RPG. I'll probably replay Final Fantasy VI. Final Fantasy VI still looks really good. Mario RPG, and of course Donkey Kong Country as well.
I've always thought Donkey Kong Country could go to hell, but like Super Mario RPG,
that game never looked good.
It did. At the time,
we had pre-rendered graphics blinders.
I think it looks good. That doesn't save the game though.
Well, the gameplay's solid. It's not. It's weird that I would be I'm the last person to fucking defend Donkey Kong Country because that character design of Donkey Kong still like gets me upset.
It's a naked thing.
Wearing a fucking tie. Yeah. His own initials. I'm like, what? it just looks so terrible. But at the time, I mean, it was an impressive, you know, thing for that system to be doing that. Same thing with Star Fox.
Star Fox is amazing, yeah.
Really impressive at the time. Star Fox still definitely has the gameplay goods. The frame rate, which I did not remember.
All 15 of them, yeah.
Can I be a Sega fan real quick?
Okay, if you have to.
Star Fox was never good. It looks like garbage. It runs at 2 frames per second.
You're just being an idiot.
It runs at least 15.
Y'all are fucking crazy.
You're just being an idiot now.
Y'all are fucking crazy.
But, like,
go play Eternal Champions, JJ.
I imagine you're probably comparing it to, like...
I'll play Panzer Dragoon.
Yeah, but that's a generation later.
Yeah,
that's
not fair.
That's like a year... They're, like, a year apart.
Still, the hardware,
what kind of comparison is that?
Like, if you're comparing Star Fox 64 and Panzer Dragoon, that's a fair fight.
But Star Fox is, like, yes, you can do it, but doesn't mean you... You
should
like
yeah,
you should.
But that
is
amazing that
the
they
epitome
did.
Of that game,
and also like it's fun to play. So I mean,
it's a great playing game. Yes,
yeah,
and there is depth to it, JJ. There's a lot to that game. If you didn't play it at the time, I understand how, like, Sarah, you would look at it and be like,
triangles.
What the fuck is going on? I like, literally, we're telling Roy, like, to shoot Pepe because he's been shot by the bad guys, and Roy's like, I don't know what is happening. Like,
yeah.
What is anything on the screen?
Like, there was all these moving bits, and I was just trying to shoot all the moving bits. And, like, I can't even, can't even really...
Triangle.
And everything happens really quickly, so it's hard to read what they're saying, too.
Right.
So I don't know, how did you guys handle that combination of skills?
Well, it's a great question, Roy.
You play it enough and you realize, this is what's happening.
For me, like, the super easy thing is that I'm an R-Wing, that's an R-Wing, don't shoot the R-Wing, shoot everything else.
Right. You could tell.
But they go past so fast. They look so similar to, like, the enemies.
There's a lot going on the first time you're playing it, too. I mean, watching Roy play it, too, I was like, wow, okay, yeah, I can kind of get... They are nice and helpful generally, where it's like, shoot the spot that is flashing bright orange and red.
And
but
there's a part where I was shooting asteroids, and that was fun, because I could kind of just, like, zone out and be like, okay, there's an orange one, I'm going to shoot that.
It goes into first person, so there's less also to kind of, screen to worry about. So you played that, and we unlocked Star Fox 2.
Which is amazing that it exists.
Thank you for finishing that. Right.
there was a little star, an invisible star at the end of one sentence, and then...
That is a true sentence.
Like, I mean,
it became
just
a true sentence.
Like, it finally happened, and that's amazing in and of itself. But even playing it and just, like, thinking that it was on the Super Nintendo at some point, it could have happened.
Yeah.
It's amazing
true.
That it exists.
And I think it's a super cool bonus, and I think it's smart... And I think this was done intentionally.
An amazing idea, yeah.
That they position it as a bonus, and it's not like...
It's not 21 games, it's 20 games plus one.
This was an amazing game, yeah. And if you think about it for a minute, it's not saying, hey, this is an amazing game that belongs with these others. It's more like, hey, here's a fun extra bonus novelty. We're not counting this as a game. This is just a bonus. Don't think of this as taking a slot from Cybernator or any other game that deserved this
more. Reserve that for the fucking soccer game that they included on Super Famicom.
Right.
Well, but, like, playing it, I played, like, two actual planets of it.
Yeah.
And there are the little... It's kind of like Command in that you have this overworld stuff and, like, you can get into random counters and stuff.
Right, Star Fox Command.
On the DS, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was impressed by a couple things... one so was that it's somehow okay. Yeah. So you can. This is where the walker. Like, if you played the Star Fox Zero game on Wii U, it has the walker where you can be on a planet. You can, like, run around this little rover, the chicken thing. So that was originally in Star Fox 2.
Yeah.
And in this game, so you actually have, like, this small. It's very small, but it is, like, a little open world environment that you can run around in.
Yes.
Hit switches and that opens up a new area which you then
go into. Like a little dungeon. It becomes almost like a little dungeon where you have to, like, hit the switch to open to the next room.
Yeah.
So there was a lot. You know,
going on.
A for ambition.
Yeah.
Like, in all senses of the word, A for ambition. Execution, like, but that chicken part was like, wow.
It was one thing. Another thing that impressed me was that, I mean, it was running at seemed like a worse frame rate than Star Fox 1, which I understand because now they have, like, this open world thing.
Right.
And also, the very first encounter that happened to me in the game was the all range mode from Star Fox 64. So, like, you're in just this arena with one other pilot, and you're trying to shoot down that pilot.
Right.
Which was not in the original Star Fox, but was in 64.
Right.
So, I mean, like 2 is like, I don't think you need to play this as, like, a game you want to enjoy, but a fun way that you can fill in the gaps between Star Fox and 64.
There you go.
It's interesting to see the half step.
Sure. No, interesting is something else I would also apply to it.
I enjoyed it. I mean, I played it for like 20 minutes. I liked it.
Yeah. I mean, but I think a lot of your enjoyment was coming from a, like...
Wow, holy shit.
So interesting to see.
This is what we were robbed of.
Even just the playing of it, you can hear Final Fantasy starting up back there. Such a good intro.
Speaking of,
yes.
One thing I've noticed with this is that all the noises they make are really annoying. Like, all the games kind of make the same little, like, boops and beeps. And if I was, like, a parent and had to listen to their kids play this...
Sure, you want to stop.
I don't want to stop.
I mean, Mega Man...
You were like, you wouldn't listen to Star Fox. Mark, you did not want to listen to Star Fox 2.
Mega Man X...
Don't get me wrong. Star Fox 2 had a section where I thought, like, a fire alarm had gone off or something, like Masa's computer had locked up or something. It was like... And that, if I made it sound annoying to the podcast listeners, that's on purpose. I'm sorry, but I had to do it to give you an accurate representation. It was very loud.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
There are bad games and bad sound effects. Mm-hmm. Final Fantasy VI, you picked a really bad time to bring this up, though, because Final Fantasy
VI can do an opening just fine.
Freaking amazing.
But, like, if you're if shooting is annoying, what the hell?
In Star Fox.
Yeah, if any kind of, like, action makes an obnoxious noise.
Star Fox has a great soundtrack, too.
It does, I mean, you play the first stage, but Corneria has an amazing track.
Certain games are don't... Again, certain games hold up better than others. Mm. And the sound effects also... certain times sound maybe a little... You were saying you said Digital Foundry
Digital Foundry is like a really hardcore, like old school game site, and they've been doing it for a long time. They made a really long video about the emulation on the thing, and one thing that they noticed is that high notes that are sustained have a tinny...
Okay, so I'm not going crazy.
It's right,
I'm not going
because,
crazy.
Because like, the Mega Man X hardware. Charge noise was like...
Oh, that was
I can
so,
imagine that being great.
You're saying this thing specifically. You're not saying these games.
I love video
you're
game music,
that,
but this thing...
I thought you were saying
No.
I thought you were saying the Super Nintendo, because like, you'd have to watch yourself on
that. No. It's just like... that noise, I can hear it.
It becomes a little...
Yeah, I can hear it.
More grating.
And I want to ask JJ to stop... charging
I did.
His thing because it was so fucking annoying.
It was
annoying.
Bothering... Yeah, it was bothering me too.
The NES Mini also had a weird sound thing, but that was like the sound emulation, the quality was fine, but everything was a few frames late.
Right.
So, I mean, neither... Like, it's not perfect on either, because, I mean, emulation in general is not perfect.
Yeah.
But that is one of the things on this, is that it just high notes seem to have that tinny thing to them.
Something else, while we're on the subject of things that are, like, a little bit off, you mentioned the Yoshi's Island...
Yes.
Touch Fuzzy.
Touch Fuzzy Get Dizzy stage. The backgrounds are just totally wrong. Like, if you touch... Fuzzy.
Oh,
you're supposed
right.
to get dizzy. And what happens, like, there's this brief...
Hence...
There's this brief thing where, like, the background, like, distorts.
Yeah.
But it just flashes, right?
It just flashes. The whole background disappears, and it's a solid color for a second, and then it pops back in.
Ooh.
So it's not... There's a lot of things... And, I mean, Star Fox... Oh,
I wonder
sorry,
if it was removed intentionally because of, like, a drug.
Yeah, no, it was... So I watched the Digital Foundry thing.
Yeah.
And I... It's, well, he was saying that it might be possibly the
epilepsy
thing.
Yeah.
But how does wavy, it does not, like, it flashes at all.
I don't know.
It just goes wavy.
Yeah.
How does that affect epilepsy?
One thing I just think it might be is that, I mean, this is the first time that Yoshi's Island has been brought back specifically because it's a Super FX game.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been on, like, Wii U or Wii or anything until now, except for the Game Boy Advance version.
Yeah.
And I think this might just, maybe they don't have it down yet because it's a complicated
Super
game.
Super FX 2, right?
Super FX 2, yeah.
I'm voting drug.
One of the two
thing.
Games to use then. I think the other one was, like, Star Fox 2.
Like, didn't they rename it? I thought when they re-released it on something and they renamed it or they changed it. Maybe we can
well,
look this
on,
up over the break.
On Game Boy Advance, it was Super Mario World 3, I think.
Right.
Yeah, so...
Which, wait, it was always Super Mario World 2.
It was, yeah. But I think, like, it was whatever
Super
the...
Mario Advance 3.
That's right, yeah, Super Mario Advance 3, yeah, that's right.
Other games... So people have been talking about it since it came out earlier in America, but any thoughts on any of the... Japan exclusive.
What was the one that we played, Graham?
Mystical Ninja.
Mm.
Yeah, when I came back, I walked in
is
the door.
Is that not in the US one?
It's
no.
not.
Oh,
it's a Japanese exclusive one, which is great because it's co-op and it, you know, takes advantage of having both of those controllers.
It's a good game.
It's a really good co-op game.
When I came back, I walked in the door and Roy was like, "Have you heard of a game called Goemon?"
I'm sorry. I don't know
Japanese
any of the
animes.
Yeah, and I had. I mean, I played that game a lot when I was young.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that was...
You didn't know Legend of the Mystical Ninja?
No.
It also, there were two games on the N64 that came out in North America.
Yeah. And one of them is like a...
Mario 64 clone.
Very interesting and kind of good Mario 64, like one of the very few games that you could say...
It does it well, yeah.
...did a legit attempt at making a Mario 64 game, yeah.
I mean, how did... I mean, I've...
It's
well, I played it a lot when I was a kid, so I'm wondering what you guys thought of it playing for the first time.
My favorite part.
Let's go, like, millennials play the NES. Yes!
Yay!
What did kids think of it? Did you try to touch it like a touch screen? did you think the controller was a touch screen,
Sarah? Yeah, I tried
to swipe. Yeah.
I just liked my favorite part. I mean, it's really Japanese. That's what I really liked about it. The music was really Japanese, and you never really got that growing up. They never brought over those really Japanese games, so that was cool to see.
Yeah.
Like which game? Which ones are you talking about? I mean,
with this one.
With Mystical Ninja.
Because
everything about it is
specifically
unapologetically Japanese.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about the system in general.
No, you're asking specifically
about Goemon. Yeah.
I mean, the system itself is clearly made the controllers like actual sized.
The controllers feel
it's good.
Spot on.
Now you actually want to hold them.
Yeah. Yeah. There was an interview, by the way, where I feel vindicated about the. About the tiny fucking mini controllers.
They were fine.
How they were just supposed to be novelty, and they were actually supposed to be on the Famicom. For people who don't know, the Famicom Mini, they had to fit in the console, but then they just left them, and those are the ones you play with. And, the cords were comically short. The cords are still pretty short on
They're
this.
Longer, at the very least.
They're longer, but they're not
it's something
near the U.S. ones.
It's something you would want to play at a table. Not like in your living room.
I mean, it's going to be like on the floor or hanging on the...
For the NES Mini, I bought extension cables. They were like 100 yen each on Amazon, and they work great. Okay. So, I mean, I've got like 9 feet or whatever on my NES Mini at home.
That's funny that they did, they did those.
What, so, Sarah, you were going to say something about...
Mystical Ninja. Tell me about Mystical Ninja.
Sorry, yeah.
No, I just really, I really liked how unapologetically Japanese it was. Yeah. And like accurately Japanese, too. Mm-hmm. Unlike the weird... I mean, trying the localized version...
Yeah.
It was a little weird.
One thing, I mean, I liked just, I was standing behind them telling stories.
Yeah.
And like, Mystical Ninja, obviously, is an extremely Japanese game, so when you bring that over, you have to pick what to keep and what to leave out. As far as I can tell, the only thing they left out are the characters' names. Goemon and then his friend, Ebisumaru, are the two main characters that you can play as. They changed their names to, respectively, Kid Yang and Dr. Yang. And that's all they changed.
I mean, those are not bad names. Those are not bad names.
They're not very Japanese, but...
I mean, you're not going to be, like, Goemon.
Yeah, no, you're not.
Maru,
like, but I like that they also immediately went back on that for N64, because the title of the 64 game was The Legend of the Mystical Ninja starring Goemon. So it's like, they immediately just throw that out.
No, that's true. They're like,
I like that it was starring Goemon, like, starring Goemon. You know, we cast Goemon for this game.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like a kabuki actor, right?
Yeah.
That's what I really liked, and I really liked that there's a lot of cats in it.
Mm-hmm. Shit ton of cats.
I like the crawling animation.
Yeah,
and that you can ride your friend.
Yeah, that was pretty.
And
cool.
Really,
yeah.
Graham was like, "Hey, have you like you know gotten on? Have you like piggybacked each other?"
Yeah.
And we were like, "What?" And then he's like, "Yeah, one of you laid down, and the other one jumped on the other one."
It's weird when you explain it like that.
Yeah,
but yeah. It's, the one thing we found is like games from back then really don't explain a lot because I guess like you know you probably would have seen it in an instruction manual.
You would have exactly.
Otherwise, there was just no like you would have. Yep. It would have been a miracle had you.
I mean, tutorial like it worked in the game tutorial. That's like barely. Yeah. There were you know very few even PS2 games that had that.
I like the kind of weird RPG mechanics where like. Graham was like, oh, you don't have enough sandals for this part. And I was like,
Graham, why am I so slow? And he's like, you don't have enough sandals. We got to buy you more sandals.
Stockpile on sandals.
How long did you guys play? I'm impressed.
We really liked this one game.
You really played the shit out of it.
I made them turn it on after I got here because I wanted to show them the amusement park level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where you can like get in a quiz show and race horses and shit.
Yeah.
And I wanted to show them that. But then, I sent them into a secret area where you can't actually get the best items in unless you have enough sandals to jump all the way across the rocks, and they didn't have those, so I had to explain everything.
Mm-hmm. By the way, this intro is pretty fucking terribly
annoying. Mega Man X,
This is Mega Man X intro? Like, Jesus Christ. I'm like, can this keep going on?
Honestly, it's a shame. Mega Man X soundtracks were nowhere near as good as the NES ones.
Oh, what the fuck are you talking about?
I gotta say, I'm one of those people that draws the line at X. I think
what the
X
shit?
Games are
didn't
like,
we already have this conversation?
Yeah, we did, but I was sticking up for X. Oh my god.
I think the internet by and large agreed with Graham on this
The internet, there are crazy fucking ass X fans out there. Like,
I think Storm Eagle is like one of the best tracks, period.
I think X games are good. It's just the soundtracks are not. I mean, like,
it's 1 and 2 were good. The rest were pretty bad.
Any other, like, particularly remarkable titles? Do you have the box there?
We had Justin's with us a moment ago.
He put it away.
I took it out because there was, like, drinks and stuff.
Bumping around with?
Well, I have a grievance to air.
Uh-oh.
Street Fighter was okay because JJ let me win.
Aww.
And that was another game where, like, it didn't look as good as I remembered it. But none of you motherfuckers... played Super Ghouls and Ghosts, and I get a sinking suspicion that Graham, you are a Super Ghouls and Ghosts hater.
I would.
No, I'm okay with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you went over that and were like, no one.
No, because that was after Mark mentioned that there were some games on there that don't necessarily hold up as well. I was scrolling through them and being like, you could probably skip Super Ghouls and Ghosts.
That is incorrect.
I totally disagree as well.
I mean, I've played a lot of that game, but I'm like, especially when my audience is Roy and Sarah, I don't think they need
that's
to play.
That is the game that people who don't play a lot of classic games, you should play because it's like ridiculously hard for
no
reason.
No.
And it's fun because it's not. Like, it's like the game that you like. You have beers, you have alcohol.
You play Mega Man, the tutorial, for like 5 fucking minutes, and that was boring as shit.
Yeah, because that game is we just got done with saying that.
You know, there's Secret Mana is on here as well. There's a ton of co-op and two-player games on here. Like,
they're like fake
kind
co-op.
Of a lot.
Yeah,
they're like, I call those like faux co-ops.
How is Secret of Mana fake co-op?
You don't even know what the game is, Sarah.
That was one game out of 20.
This is a good sampling. I think they did a great job.
There are no classic Capcom belt
scrolling action games.
Oh, like no
there.
Final Fight?
Yeah, no Final Fight. There's no
well, they can't do too
Knights
many
the
Capcom games
or...
on there. They had to choose, you know, a couple Capcom games and they went to
Street
Fighter.
I mean, yeah, Super Final Fight is not on there, which is too bad. I mean, stuff like
Let's get into this is interesting. So Famitsu had kind of a retro issue. It's like Super Famitsu.
And I know you're talking about they asked developers what games they would have added to it if
yes.
they could pick one.
Yes.
And I really like the results because people have good taste. Somebody
they
might have said Harvest Moon. Yeah.
I'm curious what everybody's answer would be.
I
would have
bought
question.
It if it had Harvest Moon.
Mine, I mentioned Cybernator earlier, and honestly, I think that would probably be it. I think that game is still like underrated and one of the best.
Remember one guy said
that's
Marvel
a sleeper game.
Guy said Marvel Superheroes: The War of the Gems, and I was like, dude, you
what
get one pick, and this is what you do.
Really?
It was like a guy from Spike Chunsoft or something. So I'm not going to hold it against him. But.
Some of the other picks, actually, a couple people did pick Cybernator, including my boy Hideki Kamiya, good man. So Chrono Trigger, that's a good choice.
It's a strange omission to begin with.
But. I mean.
There's a lot of license
think
issues.
About it, there
yeah.
are only 20, and they...
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. ActRaiser would have... That seemed
like... ActRaiser's a good one.
Tactics Ogre got a lot of votes.
Earthbound, which did not... Yeah. Which is in the U.S. one,
yeah.
but was not here.
It's like, they took out Earthbound so we could get soccer.
Sensible soccer.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's
nothing
reasons...
Nothing sensible about that decision.
I think there's reasons for all that stuff, though.
Yeah, like, I'm sure that's like one of those... Yeah, the kids back then played the shit out of that game.
Well,
like,
maybe not even that. Maybe like, okay, we're saving this for something else, or like the rights in
yeah.
Japan domestically, we have to pay this person that, well, or...
I imagine Chrono Trigger is always complicated, yeah. and I think like right. for Mother 2, they probably have plans. I always assume they have plans.
I'm more just angry they put Space anything plans. Other than sensible soccer in there. It's like, why would,
I'm sorry,
well,
yeah, the proper title is Super Formation Soccer.
Oh, that so, I wonder yeah. if it's like, do we have a sports game on there? Fuck, we have to put a fucking sports game on there.
It's yeah, because like the NES Mini
probably sold a shit ton.
The NES
here.
Mini had Tecmo Bowl on it, so I mean, it would have been great if they had Super Tecmo Bowl on here.
Tecmo
but...
Bowl made sense,
yeah,
because that's a great game.
Ken Griffey Baseball, that was
yeah,
a good Super
go.
Nintendo game. Yeah,
there you go.
Couple votes for like Gradius 3 and R-Type 3. I was surprised about that. Akihiro Hino, Another World, good choice from level 5, the head of level 5.
Mm.
Respect. That's a good choice. What are you
That's an interesting choice. It's another interesting choice.
Umihara Kawase, which, if you don't know what that is, Google it. Dorito it.
It's like almost a porn game now.
What?
Yeah. She got a lot older and a lot more voluptuous.
In what
the
game?
Does
DMM have the license now?
You may not be far
It was Umihara Kawase Returns. Like, they gave her one last sending off on Vita and 3DS, I think. Mm. And then she is just a much more adult woman.
Right. Now they've got
to
like
play
a
that
VR version. And...
She is a woman. And do you want to talk about the AC adapter being sold separately here?
Well, I mean, that's classic just Japan.
Classic
I mean,
Japan
Nintendo
style.
Does that with most of their products, like 3DS as well. Ever since the original 3DS, they do not give you an adapter with the unit. You have to buy that separately. Their justification is you can just use your old adapter with it. But if you're a consumer, obviously, that's a bit of a pain in the ass.
Right. They give you the cable, so honestly, you probably just use like a iPhone or an Android phone like plug.
Literally any USB adapter will work.
But they stopped doing that, right? Like Switch, Wii U, their last few systems all came with
For home consoles, yeah.
Yeah.
Portables like have not for a long time.
Right.
Yeah.
Still
the 2DS,
not.
The new 2DS does.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I mean, it's good to see them going back in that direction because that's obviously more convenient.
Yeah.
But this isn't a new thing. So,
well, yeah, but it's kind of a contradiction to what their last few consoles.
It's just
have
a bit
been.
Dumb. Yeah,
I mean, it is a weird retro thing because
they're cutting costs.
Yeah, even back then when you didn't have to, and you can reuse the Famicom one.
Yeah,
because
they
include the USB cable in the box. The AC adapter is literally just the brick.
Right, the AC adapter is just a USB to...
Converter.
Like, electrical outlet converter.
Yeah.
Does it look like the old AC adapter or anything? No.
No, no, no. Thank God.
Bummer.
That thing was way too big.
Bummer.
But I liked it, and I think there's a lot of really great stuff on here.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's definitely
it's
a super good purchase.
And, you know, it's like, whatever, $80. The US one is great, too.
Yeah.
If you only like... four of those games
the value
like, you might be able to track them down cheaper, but the idea of hooking them up and getting going through the rigmarole and whatever
it's a bit expensive. 8,000 yen,
you think so?
Yeah,
for 20 Super Nintendo games.
Yeah,
the two controllers
I was happy
and like
about.
And a few of these being like the best games ever.
Yeah, I mean they didn't skimp. That's the thing that I think makes it so worthwhile is like, there's like a, you know two what, really yeah, I of guess, the best RPGs. I mean, if you count Zelda, right. 3
and Super Metroid is in there, Super and like Metroid, it's a crazy
games
lineup.
That you will replay, yeah. you know, every couple of years.
Yeah, I just, you know, I think at this point now
plus the
I'm
box.
Ready.
Look at that box; it's so fucking awesome.
I'm just ready for like the Nintendo Classic Console where you
it's got
buy
everything
thing,
on it,
or no, you can just a la
download.
Carte it.
Oh yeah.
Like, it's like the new virtual console.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, it's a service or something.
Keep dreaming.
Gonna be interesting Keep to dreaming. See if they bother trying to do a 64 one. Just seems like the controllers would be a weird thing to figure out.
You think Game Boy is probably next?
Game Boy, yeah, that'd be a neat move. Your favorite.
Yes, absolutely. Maybe, it'll be a screen where you can actually see it, so maybe it will not be an accurate... Maybe they'll have a, like, shitty green, you can't see it in sunlight at all filter, like, specially for nostalgia's sake.
The Seiken Densetsu collection on Switch did have that. So if you want to play the Secret of Mana collection on the Switch,
You could make it green.
You could make it green,
looking like that. Yeah. I will say one final thought that I had about the Super Famicom controller, which I love. I think it's the most
that the A button is red.
Attractive version of that controller that is out there. But yes, the fact that the A button, which is like
confirm.
Choose this,
yeah.
confirm, go forward, is red. Like, what? Like, why? Why?
On the Sony, wasn't the circle the...
Circle,
wasn't that
a,
red?
That's, yeah. a, that's another shitty thing, yes. That was, they could have solved everything by making it a green circle. they didn't have to make it different for Japan and America. Like, anyway, that's another conversation, but...
Do you have an opinion on the concave versus convex X and Y buttons?
You know, I'm not so much... I never really used it. I was never like, oh, this is... Oh, right, that's the X button. I mean,
you
know where your thumb is.
Okay,
so
yeah.
I'm not... where in the U.S.,
the X
and
Y buttons
are
concave.
Yeah, and but they're all convex here. Any other final thoughts before we move on to games in the last for the last 20 years?
I think it's a good buy.
It's very cute. The system itself
is smaller. It's smaller than I think I thought it would be.
Yeah, they keep advertising as being able to fit in the palm of your hand,
and
which
it really does. Yeah.
Yep.
To me, it's not as cute as the other ones were. The other ones had more like kind of like 3D details. This one kind of, from a distance, it looks like an HDMI splitter in a way. Like, but so just, that's just like my opinion.
Yeah. Just from what it looks, just from the original design. Roy.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, like it was. I had fun with it. I'm not going to buy it.
You're not.
No, yeah. I mean, like...
I'll just leave it in the
all
office
all those games that you never played Yoshi's Island, Roy!
Yeah,
Roy.
But I'm sure that it's going to be on Switch in, like,
Roy.
6 months or something.
Is that because you've been playing Destiny 2 so much, Roy, that you're like, you don't need any other games?
No, but I have been playing Destiny 2.
What's your light level?
I don't know, Roy.
240 something, I think.
Mark!
Yes.
I had the credits roll yesterday.
Nice.
I beat the game.
What's your class?
The thief one. Hunter.
Hunter. Yeah. Okay.
Jeez, Mark, you would know all this if you actually played with him.
Oh, what,
are you
wow.
ever playing?
Oh,
I've never. It's yes. not like I'm getting
the story.
Invites.
The story I heard was Roy kind of like nudged you in a way.
Well, I was like,
what?
I was like,
kind
I was
of like hoping
like,
for an invite.
Oh, well, no, but actually, I never got back to you. I was like, I'll let you know if I get into it, and then I never. So that's.
That's not the story
I guess
heard.
It's not me.
I heard a different story.
Roy goes
Don't be
home,
ashamed.
Invites every night, and then I just ignore it. I'm just like, oh, I'm actually just about to get off, and then I'm like playing a Nightfall for another hour.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true at all. I would love to. Are you playing with other people? Are people
no.
playing solo? Okay,
I joined.
I'm amazed you're still playing if you're playing solo because it's so much more fun with other people.
You fucking loser.
Yeah.
It is kind of like I'm not sure why I'm playing. Sometimes I'm like
right.
I just keep playing because like when you do get
what's well, the loop
the loop yeah
the
exactly
and loop are
yeah.
so like compelling.
It's funny. I think it actually has a lot of similar hooks as like Granblue and like Final Fantasy 14 for me.
Oh,
where it's just
this. No, sorry, Roy. Keep going.
Himself.
I'm just like this is the best conversation. Keep going.
So yeah, just like you know when. The feeling of seeing a loot thing drop off of an enemy,
right.
picking it up and be like, this is slightly better than this thing that I have, putting it on and watching another go up slightly, it's like, yeah.
And then you want to try it out, and then while you try it out, the next thing drops,
yeah.
and you're like, well, okay, I guess I'll just see what that is before I go to bed.
Yeah,
or,
it's,
et cetera, rinse and repeat.
I feel like now that Roy has played Destiny, Mark, we need to get you playing Grand Blue Fantasy.
I think it's only fair. Do you think I will like it, or is this just like a like,
I think it's
petty
only fair.
Revenge thing?
No, I think it's only fair that you play Granblue. So you can understand each other.
I mean, I would try it.
Another similarity
I would
is
love,
like
to love a cell phone game, but
yeah. with Destiny 2, there's like all these little things you can do, and I don't necessarily know why I want to do them.
Okay,
and
give me an example.
So, like, you know how you land on a planet and you bring up, like, the menu, the map, and then you hold R2, and it tells you, like, here, you have, like, a checklist of three things to do.
Yes.
I don't know the point of doing those things.
So, it lists, I do them. Actually, underneath the task, it lists what you will get out of it. So, it will say, like, you know, complete a bunch of Nightfall, or it would say, like, complete the Nightfall or whatever, and then underneath it'll show, like, a little engram, and it'll say powerful gear.
No, I'm talking about, like, when you're just on a planet, and you pull up your ghost thing. Okay. And on every planet, it has, like, three things to do. And it'll be, like, kill 75 of this thing.
Okay.
And then I do, and it's, like...
You get a bunch of tokens.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, and you turn those into the NPC on that planet, and they'll give you loot, so...
In the story...
This is part of what... And like Monster Hunter, this is part of the game, though. Like, the game does not super explain everything. And part of it is, like, oh, what should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? Mm. And, like, playing by yourself is just... not good for lots
say it,
of
Mark,
reasons.
Say it, Mark, say it.
What?
What you're really thinking.
What? Playing by yourself is... It's only the when you have to.
Yeah.
You should try to play with other people as much as you can.
I had one of my... Somebody from my friends list just jump into my story mode once.
Oh, cool.
And that was cool.
Yeah.
And but they were like...
Stuff gets done faster. It's a lot easier.
Yeah, I mean, but he was, like, super strong, so it was almost like I felt like it was bothering him.
No, dude. Okay.
Oh.
I know how you feel,
you know?
Yeah. I'll take you through some strikes and some nightfalls and maybe the raid if you're one day ready for it. Someday, right. This podcast will raid together. That's right. Someday, I'm going to drag you all into it, and you're all going to be like, Mark, I was so wrong. Please forgive me. Mm. This is amazing. But, my life has changed.
When you play, how do you communicate? Do you have, like, a headset plugged in? Or,
headset.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a bit of a commitment. I don't know.
Yeah. I know. Well, you don't have to.
Commitment.
It depends on what the activity is, where you can be like, okay, we don't have to talk, Roy. Like,
gotcha.
That's what you're worried
about. That's just so weird, though, when you just, like, run around
friends.
Each other in a circle, like, to communicate.
I mean, I like Dark Souls' approach to multiplayer, where it's like you can communicate through emotes and, like...
Blind.
Well, yeah, that's good,
too. When I don't have the mic plugged in, like, if my daughter's
in the room.
But
that's so weird to, like, when you see the other person stop moving, you know they're messaging you, and then you kind of have to pause and wait.
Yeah.
And...
yeah, but it doesn't happen that often. Mostly, you can usually... Mm. I mean, you're just... following them and shooting shit, so... Yeah.
Use the Nintendo voice chat app.
Oh, God. So what else have you been playing, Roy? Anything? Just Destiny?
No, I've been... So my girlfriend's really into Danganronpa?
Yeah.
I always say it wrong, so I have to really focus when I say it.
I have to, too.
Yeah.
Danganronpa.
I think you got it.
Three.
So, like, the third one came out recently.
The game with the... teddy bear.
The teddy bear,
The evil teddy bear.
Teddy bears now. There's just...
Oh, shit.
So there's,
spoilers.
Like, so many of them.
Roy.
Well, there's been a second one recently. Okay.
More spoilers, Roy.
The third one.
Each game is a different, like, murdering teddy bear.
Just spoilers everywhere here.
Yeah.
So, the teddy bear is the murderer?
No.
JJ.
You said too much.
So, very broadly, each game is, I think, like, 12 or so students... are taken from their respective schools, dropped into a situation where this bear is like, hey, you gotta start killing each other.
So we've talked about this before.
We have.
Just to back up, this is like a genre. This isn't even just this game. There's a bunch of other games and manga and anime where this is like the prevailing thing. I don't know who did it first. Graham, do you know? Is this a game?
I don't know. Everybody
thing?
Always gives it to Battle Royale.
Yeah, that's true.
Really?
Yeah. That's true, yeah.
But
then people give it to Stephen King or whatever.
Specifically brought from different places and put in a room where they have to... Well, I guess that is the basic setup for Battle Royale.
They're all the same class in Battle Royale, but whatever.
It's a very Japanese idea where it's like this kind of thing where... there's this force telling you to do a thing, and there's just nothing you can do about it. You just gotta go along with it, and
what
do your best.
Don't kill each other,
or do you?
I mean, so far I do. So far, everybody seems to be very much like, well, we just gotta do this.
I mean, in the beginning, there's always like some resistance, and then like one student. There's always that one student who kind of like fucks it up, and then you're like, well, the dam's broken.
Guess
time to start a murdering.
So, and this is mostly happening through, like, what type of... How would you describe the game and the interface? And
so there's different modes. There's like, an exploration mode, which is, like, this kind of strange, like...
First person.
First person, 3D, like, looking around.
Yeah.
And you have, like, cursor where you can examine things.
Right.
And
almost like an adventure game.
Like exactly. Like a point and click, but kind of like a 3D one. And you could talk to people in that way, and there's like a map, different floors in the like the school where you are, and and then there's like a day cycle, almost like Persona. Mm-hmm. So it's like you have a certain amount of free time a day where you can hang out with different people that you want.
Mm-hmm.
And you can give them gifts that you get from a gachapon, which takes coins that you get just by, in that same like exploration mode, you can just like hit a button and like move around whatever is in the foreground. So if there's like a bunch of chairs, you can just like knock them all away, and then you'll get like coins that you can use in the gacha machine.
Okay.
What I remember about the first game was being like somebody would die.
Yeah.
And then you basically, as the person who like wants to believe that everybody is great, would try to investigate who the bad person was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's still the same kind of thing where like you're trying to look for clues.
Yes.
I remember there being like a courtroom sequence where
like
you try
ultimatum?
To like.
Like if you find the one person who did it, they die.
And then
but
everybody
else goes free. If you don't figure out who killed who, everyone else dies and they get to go free.
Yeah, is it the same kind of setup?
Exactly, yeah.
So you're looking for clues
so
about who
has
killed
to,
the person.
Yeah, someone has to commit the perfect murder, and if they get away with it, they supposedly can walk free.
Yeah.
And how are you building up these clues? Does the game keep track of things for you? Are you, like, literally writing stuff down?
Yes.
Answer questions.
Well, you actually, like, you find what are called truth bullets, which are, like...
Badass.
Which are, like, you'll see a thing, like, let's say this bottle is knocked over. You'd be like, oh, that bottle is knocked over. That's a thing I can bring up later on. And then you would carry that with you into...
It's like an item. Now you've earned that item to be able to use in conversations and stuff.
Kind of. And then you carry that over into the court sequence, which I think was what Graham was talking about, where it's like, people will say things like, Graham will be like, I definitely didn't kill him because that bottle was standing straight up, and I would be like, oh, fuck no, that bottle was knocked over.
So it's kind of like a court record in Phoenix, right? Where you can be like, this contradicts what you say here.
Although it goes really fast.
It goes really fast, and also, like, I've only gotten as far as the first one, and they add a lot of... I think each game they probably are adding new versions of that. Because now it's at the point where there was a scenario where, like, the main character... It's like a rhythm game where, like, you're tapping a button based on what people are saying, and, like, her clothes are coming off, and I'm like... All right. Well, I guess
you're like, all right.
I guess the game has reached that stage
that's
now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where we are. Does it still
have the kind of like over the top torture porn?
God, I hope so.
I got as far as the first first execution, which like holy shit. Not only is it a big twist, but it's also it was really hard to watch. Mm. And like afterwards, I was like, I don't know if I want to play this anymore.
I don't know if you're following that part, but like if somebody wants to get away with the perfect murder, but then if you go into the courtroom sequence and you nail them and you prove that they did it, then that person is just executed, and it shows you this giant long FMV sequence.
And usually, it's
of
like
them
a,
being
it's
murdered
like,
somehow.
It's like 3D and it's like really high production.
Yeah,
because when I watch the anime
FMV.
Well, I mean,
the of an animated sequence.
It's like it's a CG movie,
It's like really well done because when I watch the anime, they use the murder sequences from the game in the anime. Mm. So, like, it would all change to, like, some 3D shit.
Yeah, they clearly know what they can and can't do because, like, blood is pink. And I think maybe they do that because then it's,
blood
like,
is
not
like fluorescent
technically
pink.
Or no, it's not technically blood.
I'm surprised, especially this being, like, a Japanese game because you can't, you know, show dismemberment, right? And things like that in general. Like, there's ways around it, but, like, you know, usually, especially recently, the Japanese version is the more toned down one. So it's not the thing where they don't show it, but not seeing it is worse than seeing it. Like they're just showing explicit crazy shit.
Well, from what I saw in the first game, anyway, one of the most uncomfortable thing was like seeing...
Give me an example. Give me a real example.
Well,
spoiler
like,
tag.
I think I think it was like there was a woman who was just going to be crushed by something from above or something.
Or something roll a rock on her?
Like a drop something on her. Okay. So she would just be flattened or whatever. But the worst part about the scenes in general is like you see the character who's about to die being worried about being about to die.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. And that's harder than seeing them die.
Okay, okay.
I don't know, but they like they murdered somebody.
Yeah.
They murdered somebody.
And deserve it.
Sure,
What are you saying? Eye for an eye, Sarah? Is this
I'm just saying like
Sarah, Sharia law?
Death penalty Podzorski. Yeah.
Damn.
The one I remember was they usually relate, every character kind of has like a specific quirk about them, and they usually relate their final killing to their like hobby.
Everybody's like the master at their skill. So in the main character in this game is like the expert pianist.
Yeah.
So like whoever you're talking about is probably an expert at
this one was like the expert. He was really good at baseball.
Oh.
So they put him in front of one of those automatic baseball throwing machines and they just shot a million balls at him until he died.
I mean, that almost sounds like
They're so Tom over the top.
Tom and Jerry.
Yeah,
like,
it is a little bit, but
silly.
But still, like the art in the game, it's like it's really pretty the way they draw the characters. But then sometimes they just when they have a different expression, they're like horribly ugly. Like whenever they're like sad or something, like they've got like tears coming out of their eyes and like snot coming out of their nose, and they're like drooling, and they're just like their whole face is like crunched up.
Yeah, it's, they're about to die.
Well, no, but I mean, these are the expressions they use even when if they're just like, oh, I'm sad that Graham knocked the bottle over or something, you know? Like, it's not just for during the harder-to-watch parts.
So you watched the anime.
The thing is I watched the anime before I played the game, and it...
Which one? The first one. Okay.
And I really liked the anime, and so I decided to play the game, and it really kind of gave me a leg up. Because they did the anime so close to what the game was that I kind of knew what all the clues were.
Yeah, that seems like it would.
Yeah, but I mean, and then when I figured out that like the death scenes were just the same as in the anime, I was just like,
oh, that sucks.
But it's kind of cool.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it sucks that like if you had seen the anime, cool. like that's kind of like the reward.
No, it should
be. So not getting that is like.
Yeah, I'm assuming the anime came out way after the game, probably, and so they were like, okay.
It was originally PSP.
Yeah, I played it on PSP.
Oh, wow. Okay. Who else has been playing? What else? Golf Story.
So in lighter news.
Golf Story.
The absolute opposite.
Golf Night.
Which fucking everybody seems like is playing right now.
Is it just on Switch right
yes.
now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is kind of cool that it's like... And I had not heard anything about this game at all before it came out.
Yeah, it was... first I think I saw it was on that Nindies presentation during...
Right.
PAX, I believe, yeah.
A couple months ago.
Yep. Yeah, but like very organic word of mouth behind this game, but has exploded. So like, is it like Mario Golf, basically?
So...
It's okay.
It's the closest thing to it,
To be fair,
right?
I played Mario Golf.
I did not.
And just before walking into this, I really had this like anti-golf game things because golf games are like what my grandparents like kept next to their toilet, and you'd play because there was nothing else to do because cell phones didn't exist.
But you played Mario
Golf. But I played Mario Golf. I didn't like it.
You did not like it?
No.
Really?
That's kind of fucked up.
Well, I played the 3D one. Like, I played one of the, like, the newer ones.
So you didn't play the Game Boy Color one?
Yeah, no.
Okay, yeah, I'm talking about the Game Boy Color one, which
you have
is
to be
RPG.
Specific, there's more than one.
Well, but this is the one that everybody points to and says, like, that game, I would think even the creator would acknowledge that game was what begot this game, because...
Yeah, as soon as you have the RPG elements in the golf game, like, it becomes a different beast.
Right.
And I assume that's what Golf Story is. I haven't played it, but does it have that character development aspect?
This is my deep, dark shame because that's the first game that 8-4 ever worked on, Mario Golf.
It was Power Tennis on the Game Boy Advance.
That was tennis, yeah.
Oh.
You fucking fired.
When the fuck was Mario
was
Golf?
Before that.
Mario Golf was on the Game Boy Color.
It's our anniversary.
Yeah.
It's
the 12th anniversary, not the 20th anniversary. JJ, trust me.
No, because, it was tennis.
Yeah.
Why did I think that was golf?
Tennis Power Tour on the Game Boy Advance.
Why did I think that was golf for the longest time?
First game, happy 12th birthday.
Literally, by the way, before I started working here, I always thought it was the golf game. Okay. And I've seen that box a million times. Anyways,
would be, I mean, I'm sure they did fine on tennis, but golf would be something to even more proud of.
I never played that one because I didn't own a Game Boy or Game Boy Color.
So it's kind of infamous. I mean, it's our kind of, I would say it's
well, I mean,
it's famous.
And, it and tennis
well
both
regarded.
On the Game Boy Color, like both of them.
Right.
Like defined what those were.
But so, sure. I don't know the answer to your question, but it's an RPG
fine.
That is a golf game.
That's fine. Most people didn't play Mario Golf anyway, so let's just go on. So what did you, first of all, what got you to play it then, Sarah?
Someone told me it was like, kind of looks like Stardew Valley.
Yep.
And it kind of has that feeling. Someone was like, it's like an RPG, but with golf.
Yeah.
I don't...
Right.
It's very chill. Like, when you watch footage of it, it's very relaxing.
It's only, like, $16, so...
Okay, yeah.
And so, like, it had that kind of appeal. Like, I think I needed a relaxing game at this time in my life.
Right, right.
And
we could all use a relaxing game around
and, yeah, it kind of scratched that itch for me. And, like... like Sarah, golf games and me, no.
Right.
There's like a couple of older golf arcade games that I'll play because they're funny.
Right. Golden Moment. Funny. Really?
Neo Turf Masters.
Oh,
like the faces
weird.
And stuff.
Okay. Sure.
Anyways, but so like golf isn't really like something, golf games are not something I like seek out.
This isn't the, and this, I mean, golf is the like the vehicle it uses, right? But would you even described this much as a golf game? Like,
no, they have all the putters.
It's kind of secondary as golf. Yes. But so describe it, what it is. For people who haven't heard of it at all, it's a Switch game. It's $15. Mm-hmm. Kind of came out of nowhere. It's also on Steam. No.
I don't think so. I think it's just Switch only. Right now.
It looks like it should be a PC game.
I'm sure it will be eventually, but Switch only. And yeah, what's it like?
Well, it's, I mean, it plays like an RPG. You literally wake up at the beginning, get out of bed, and then you go to a town, and then you start going on quests, and the quests all involve golfing.
So, give me an example.
Well, Sarah, you've played a bit more than I have.
Yeah, so the thing is like, you'll end up on this golf course, and there's various people spread out, and this one guy will be like, he's like, I'm feeling really bad about myself, I'm really self-conscious, I really want, like, a red bandana. And you're like, okay, this guy wants red bandana, and on one of, like, the holes, there's a flag that's red, and if you hit a ball or throw a ball into the hole, the flag lowers. You can grab it, and you bring it back to him, and in return, he'll give you, like, money, and you can use money to buy different clubs.
You can throw balls?
Yes. It's my favorite part of the game.
I was gonna say,
because you can throw infinite amount of balls on the ground, and they don't disappear. until you leave that area, the balls...
And they bounce off each other. They're physics, right?
I love to throw the balls into the holes, because they have so many different sound effects that happen when you throw it, and it sounds so realistic, and it's so rewarding. I sat there for like 5 minutes just throwing balls into a hole. Like, this is
my
golf story.
They disappear when they go into the hole?
When they go into the hole, they disappear.
Yeah.
But when they hit the ground, you could just have infinity amount of balls on the ground, and then when you run through them, they like... Like
that
bowling pins.
Cool.
Yeah.
So it's an art. It's a cutesy kind of cartoony aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, overhead RPG that uses golf. I mean, are there battles in it?
You do, like, you'll kind of golf against an opponent.
Okay.
And whoever wins the actual golf, you'll, like, do a certain number of holes.
Right.
And they'll be like par three or something.
So you're not fighting directly, but there's like a golf. I mean, not to call it like a part of the game is a mini game that is actual just. Regular ass kind
yeah
of
to actually
game.
Like get through the game you have to like win those little like mini tournaments against
and how
somebody
is the game of golf that's in it
you mean how do you like play the
just,
game of golf
yeah exactly is it fun is it
it's,
like very active is it the same like
I imagine a game
moving back
you pretty
forth?
Much it is kind of a meter of when you can shoot
yeah.
but you actually don't need to know anything about golf to play the game and after I finish playing this game I will probably still know nothing about golf.
Okay.
Yeah, like, is it the exact same thing as Mario Golf, where basically, like, you are about to take your shot, it gives you 1 meter, you hit it all the way at the end for power, and then all the way at the beginning for accuracy?
Yes, that's pretty much what it is. Yep.
Holy shit, well, that's...
And then there's, like, a precision...
Perfect golf game.
There's a precision mode where you
where
can, like...
get the idea?
You can, like, more accurately aim your ball, and then on the little bar, they'll have a little notch...
Mm-hmm.
For where how much power you need to get it to where you were aiming it.
Gotcha. Cool.
So there's like a little bit
auto aims
in there.
A bit, yeah.
Can you throw balls at NPCs?
Yes, you can. And when they hit, they'll say something.
Nice.
Yeah.
So describe what's the like? I'm assuming it's kind of a quirky, kind of humorous take on things, lighthearted.
Yeah.
What would you game?
Like, it's like quirky and like it's Australian. It's very Australian.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody's a lad and
they're crocs in the water.
Yeah.
What would you compare the like the story style to? What other game?
Is there like an overarching?
Yeah,
like, plot?
I mean, okay.
The
overarching plot is you're like some dude and you're like I'm gonna be the very best golfer like no one ever was.
Okay, so there's no plot.
Yep. So that's it, and because. For me, the quests are way more fun. Like, the story of the quest, the little side quests, like getting that guy's red bandana.
Mm.
On this other place, I had to... All the courses are kind of different. So the first one, you're in a really run-down course. But then you'll go to another course, like, you know, the competing course. And it's, like, dinosaur bones. And it's, like, everyone's kind of a caveman there.
Yeah.
And there's an all-sand course. And when you go to the caveman course, I had to, like, return all these turtles to the lake. So literally, I was just going up, picking up turtles, and then putting them down, and then you can bounce golf balls off the turtles to complete a quest.
Yeah.
And you can actually dig with your golf club. You'll go to certain spots, and you can just whack the ground, and you'll dig up treasure. It's more like you're completing a lot of quests using golf as your tool.
Right. And then there's this very, it's like this very simple overarching story where your dad, you like golfed with your dad, and you were like going to prove yourself or something.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. To be the best golfer, like she was saying,
like no one ever was.
Yeah,
you're playing this on your commute or when are you
playing it at home to like wind down. It's good for that.
Cool, nice.
Except for when you like get close to a hole and you don't know the slope and you can't visually see the slope and you go to hit that hole in one and it just like veers off.
So yeah, that, if I had one gripe, it's the putting. There's no like way to see how the green kind of deforms.
Or where it starts to form.
So it's just an arrow that shows, like...
Okay, that's exactly what Mario Golf did. Yeah, so it's just, like, it shows you big arrows or small arrows.
So clearly
they
the arrow is one size.
This is a reskin of Mario.
Yeah, basically.
Like, at this point, text. It feels like it.
Yeah.
But, and, like, so it's hard to, like, how much exactly it's going to curve and where, you don't know. So, you'll miss a lot of putts just from that, and that's kind of...
And I've broken the game a few times. Like, I had my game crash.
Yeah. I've heard it's buggy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, don't... walk into this with really high expectations, realize that it's like $15 game,
right?
Yeah,
exactly.
But it is still, for what it is,
buy some strands,
fun and interesting.
Yeah, fun, relaxing, good music. And
what did the guy give you that wanted the red bandana? I want to know the end of the story.
Oh, well, basically they just give you money.
Yeah,
okay.
When you complete these quests, they'll give you money, and then you take the money and you can buy, like, I bought like an armband that would let me throw golf balls farther.
Nice.
Because I like throwing golf balls at things.
Do you get like better clubs?
Yes,
there?
Yes, you can get, you can upgrade your clubs. And like, you have, based on like the distance, you can switch between like a driver or your wedge or whatever, getting out of the sand.
Yep. I've seen people talking about what the different stats do and stuff like that for you guys.
The thing about the stats is I am so confused. I am just...
I don't get them either.
Randomly putting points places.
Yeah, you should probably read about them.
Because like, there's the power stat and then everything else.
Which, yeah, but if power you put seems any, pretty straightforward.
If you put any points into power, all the other ones go down.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, okay, that kind of thing.
And you can take points away.
Yeah.
So you can put points in and you can take them out.
Do you level up and that's how you get points?
Yep.
Yeah. So I guess in a way you can probably customize your character for whatever you're doing, but...
I don't understand
throwing golf balls, for example.
Yeah, like it... Just let me golf. I don't know.
Let me golf, but in air quotes, because I just want to like hit a ball as far as I can.
Right. I just want to hear the noise when it goes in the hole.
Well, that's cool. That sounds like a very like a solid recommendation. I'm starting to understand. I mean, it's interesting that... there hasn't been another
golf game.
Mario Golf since that game, which was rarely well regarded.
Since what game?
Mario Golf.
For instance, Mario Golf,
the Game Boy Color one.
But
in like 1997.
Yeah. I understand.
1999 or 2000.
There was like an RPG Mario Golf.
Yeah. And then Mario Golf, I believe on the Advance, was also similar. And then after that, every single one since then has just been a straight up golf game, like Hot Shots or whatever.
They kind of gave up on that. Yeah. But
I mean, it's been a trend lately where people just like take an old game and then make it again. Like,
no,
I mean, Stardew Valley is Harvest Moon.
No.
This game is just Mario Golf.
They just do it, but then they're like, but we're going to do it a little bit better.
Yeah, and I think that's great. I mean, I love seeing that
too,
trend.
Yeah. On our interview with the two Nintendo guys, I like embarrassingly said that our first game that we worked on was Mario Golf, and nobody fucking corrected
me.
Nobody corrected me. John was on that.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
When we were talking
Fire Emblem
to...
Guys?
No, yeah, the Fire Emblem guys.
Oh
really?
Boost, man.
Okay. Well,
nobody corrected me.
Go back and fix it and upload it before anybody realizes
I can't believe you guys are dicks.
Speaking of talking to game developers, we have two very special guests that we haven't talked about coming right up after this. We have an interview with two of our friends. We'll intro them there, so I'll just leave it at that. But two friends from Ubisoft who are in town kind of celebrating the completion of South Park the Fractured But Whole.
Yes. Which you wouldn't think is a game that we would talk about on the show.
Right.
But you will find out that the interview has all sorts of interesting things about Japanese games.
That's right. There's a lot of... I mean, yeah, come to find out. Like, it was developed... part of it was developed here.
Including the shocking secret behind a character that was supposed to be in Soul Calibur 2.
And yes, stick around for shocking revelations. And really, I think just a generally a good time. There were two really good guys. I was really happy with how the interview came out. We talked a lot about not just about South Park, but about their past and histories in the gaming industry and game development in general. So stick around for that. And then after that, we will be back with a very short news section. Not too much happened, and the show's getting probably pretty long. So, but do stick around, and we'll be right back. All right, and we are back with our very special guests.
Special guests.
First of all, That was good, JJ.
Thank you.
Long-time friend of the show. First time on the show, I want to say. Yeah. How has that happened?
I don't know.
Given your storied past intertwined with 8-4 and everything.
I know.
That's crazy.
I know. I've never been invited, actually.
Okay.
I will say, over the years that I've worked at 8-4, the times that I've met you, you literally have just, like, you're like a ghost who just,
like a
comes
phantom.
In. And, yeah, comes in and out like a...
That's
now,
true. That's
now, on the wind.
I'm here now, passing Phantom Hero. Yeah. I'm just gonna mint that nickname for you right on the spot here.
All
right, great to have you finally.
I know, finally, I'm excited.
Finally on the show.
I'm finally worthy. Apparently,
we should talk about your past and how it is intertwined with 8-4 and how you in fact started 8-4. Some might say made 8-4 what it is today single-handedly.
I did.
Yeah. Some might say
I will take all the credit.
That would
for
be
all
just
the great.
That would
greatness.
Be you though. You'd be the only one who'd say that stuff. And also joining us, also for the first time. Also, I'm just going to call you a friend of the show. Okay, I'm going to make that assumption.
Yeah.
Air Schroeder, Jason Schroeder, game director on South Park, Fractured But Whole.
Hi.
How you doing?
Fantastic.
Welcome to Tokyo.
Thanks.
Have you been to Japan before?
This is, I think my sixth time in
Japan. Okay. Oh, yep. Sorry. So always for work or for fun?
Both.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So what has brought you here before for work? What is your past?
So we work with a studio in Osaka, mm-hmm. And so we get to come out here to collaborate with them on site. We also worked on a game called Rocksmith years ago.
An 8-4 joint?
Yes.
That's right. In Japan,
that's
it was.
Right.
Yes, it was.
8-4 did the Japanese localization.
Yep. That was, nice. I think, one of our first EDJ projects.
It was.
It was,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So that was my first time in Japan, was actually out here for the UBI days, where we had Rocksmith on stage and some Japanese artists playing bass.
Nice.
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then there is UBI. There's a Ubisoft here in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And there's also, you guys have a development house.
Studio in Osaka.
In Osaka. And they worked on South Park.
That's right.
Okay, cool. So how do you guys... So Ubisoft is kind of famous for this.
Mm-hmm.
You guys actually have studios all over the world.
Mm.
Is there a Ubisoft in Africa somewhere? I think there is. Or there was.
We had one in Morocco.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is amazing. There's places you don't even know exist.
Right?
Ubisoft has a studio there.
And we've been adding, actually, a decent amount this year, too.
Oh, really?
We now added, three?
I think three or four. Berlin, a new one in Quebec.
Nice.
And then another. Well, we picked up...
the one in Sweden.
Sweden, yeah.
So
there's at least three. I think there's more.
So Ubisoft is kind of famous for that, distributing work among different studios, like Assassin's Creed games, especially, the bigger
Seven
titles,
studios,
right?
Eight studios,
yeah. So you did that with South Park. Who all worked on South Park?
Let's see. The majority of it was distributed between San Francisco and Osaka.
Mm-hmm.
But we also had Massive helping out,
right?
Quite massively.
Okay.
And sorry,
it's a comedy game.
Oh, come on! Yes.
We'll add the rim shot in later. Wait, so why? So what is the? How do you section that up? Why Japan? And what is the section that the Osaka office is handling? Is it all art stuff, I'm assuming it's not...
So normally, what we do at Ubisoft is when we distribute the work, we break it up into different sections and features, and then have one studio working on a major feature. I think that's the way Assassin's Creed works.
Right.
But for us, we wanted to try something different.
Mm-hmm.
And so we actually had a very interwoven development where... You can't really say, Osaka worked on this, as opposed to...
It's just the whole game.
The whole game was distributed, across the studio. So, even in the same discipline, we had people on both sides.
So, do they get, South Park, does it have a presence in Japan at all? And, I'm assuming there's a mix of foreign workers and Japanese workers at Ubisoft here in Japan, but probably majority Japanese workers?
We have about a third foreigners, and then the rest are Japanese.
So, do they get it? For lack of a better word? Can they watch South Park? Do you give them subtitled episodes? The humor?
There's been some research on the team's part, for sure, and, trying to find fan subs, which actually exist for South Park here in Japan.
Do you find yourself like on the whiteboard, like, okay, so here's, you know, Donald Trump is, and like one of, this is why it's funny when he says, you know,
I think Japan's very versed in Donald Trump.
Well, okay, yeah, that part, yeah, maybe, but I mean, South Park coming from 8.4, like, talk about something ridiculously difficult to localize to get across. It's so culturally ingrained in what's going on literally that week in America. So, like, how do you ever have to have weird conversations with your Japanese workers? Like, okay, this is not working because the reason it's funny is because this, or...
I think that they tended to go toward the visual gags.
Right.
Because that was just... seemed like there was an obvious joke there, and then
right.
it would be in sort of the discussion of why are you choosing that prop, or why did you for this puzzle that you're working on, or why are you kind of pitching this reference from the show, because it's like seemed so maybe out of left field to me,
right?
And then they'd be like, well, I think that's the gag, and
yeah,
I'd be like, oh, you totally missed that everything about that episode was actually about what the people were saying at that time.
Yeah.
The visual reference for someone that actually understands what they're talking about, you won't even remember it. But they would be like, this is a really important, you know, car. And
yeah.
I'd be like, no, that is not an important car. that's just something that you notice because you can't understand what they're
saying.
That's
really interesting to me, at least because I do think comedy in general in Japan, not to generalize too much, but there is still more like a slapstick.
Oh,
totally.
That's not even a generalization.
I mean, yeah, there's still the comedy duo is still like a very set thing here, and so there is still like make a joke, like
wacky, funny faces,
other guy.
Slaps.
Yeah, right? And it's not just there are more sophisticated like different levels of comedy,
relatively.
But to try to think of like a Japanese equivalent of South Park, I can't even. There's no. Right. I mean, there's
no.
That level
Shin-chan,
of like satire.
Shin-chan, from what I've seen, is something that I can kind of point at
that
helps. Where it's like that the kid is saying something outrageous,
right?
And it's in some ways he gets away with saying things because he's a kid,
right? Yeah. Crayon Shin-chan,
and it kind of pushes him, you know, into wacky situations.
Right.
So I think there is at least that formula that I was able to find one reference and be like, it's kind
of
like that.
There's not a lot of political humor in Japan. There's one duo, Bakusho Mondai. They base most of their comedy off of politics.
Now that you mention it, that's completely true.
There's not a lot of like comedy that is pointed towards
like social
commentary,
like social satire and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so let's back up a little bit. So we started to touch a little bit on your guys' past. So now I made reference to your storied history with 8.4, but so where does that come from? How did you get in the game industry? What have you been doing? How long have you been? What have you been doing these like 20 years?
I know, it's been 20.
It's been like 20 years.
Close to 20 years at least. Not quite.
Right.
But, you know, mine's one of those stories of I just fell into the industry. When I was in college, you know, my friend, he was starting up a game website, and he needed people to fill content. And so, like, you know, writing descriptions of games because he wanted to create a game portal, right? And it was called gamers.com.
And your friend was?
Dennis Fong, who, you know, Thresh.
Did you guys go to the same college then?
No, we went to the same high school, actually.
Okay.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You know he beat my friend, Tom Kimsey, in the Red Annihilation tournament to win John Carmack's Ferrari.
Wait, yeah,
so
that's right.
That Thresh? The, like, Quake Thresh?
Yes.
Yeah, the Quake Thresh. Yeah,
the Quake
Thresh.
Whoa.
So, yeah, so we were friends in high school. And,
what?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so after he won the money and then, you know, he got famous, you know, he got together with other people to start up a game, basically a destination.
Gamers.com.
Gamers.com. Gosh.
John Riccardi was lured out to the coast and actually came to Japan originally at the Legress of Gamers.com.
That's right. That's right.
Before it folded like a month after he got here.
I think it lasted Yeah, just
it was
about.
Pretty quick after he got here. Yeah, it got him here. Though.
I mean, to the point where like it's like, hey, couldn't you guys have planned this just a little bit better?
But it did get him here, so like I don't think he would complain about that.
Yeah.
So okay, so you started at gamers.com and you were writing news and reviews.
I was the only Japanese speaker at the time.
Yeah,
I think we added. More people, after, but yeah, uh-huh. I was the first. And so I went around, with John TGS. I was basically his interpreter, his guide,
You make this like scrunchy face when you say that, just like in disgust. Like, yeah.
I was his lackey. Yeah, I was. I was his lackey. No, it was great though. It was a great way to actually, get into the industry and get to know people. Because, he knew a lot of people, knew a lot of things. And just to be part of that, that was really cool. And so after Gamers.com folded, it got annihilated, essentially.
Part of the whole, dot-com boom and bust.
Yeah.
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 Definitely a poster child.
I think from what I heard, John and Shu and Che, they made bank. But the rest of us were like, chump change.
Easy to say now that John is not here. Yeah, this is the first time I'm hearing this story. Yeah.
Oh, no. He told me, God, you guys only make that much. I'm like, wait, is this bad? Wait, are you guys making more than? Oh.
There was probably a class of people that were lured from other gaming jobs.
That's right.
And there were other people that were new into the industry.
And so we were the grunts.
Yeah.
And so, we were... paid with the promise of but you're gonna get stock options.
Which
remember those days?
That era.
Oh yeah,
that was the late 90s. .com.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. For sure. Okay, so then gamers.com goes tits up and then
after that, I like the industry.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. But then I said, you know what? Let me take a chance at making games. Be on the other side. Because obviously there were a couple of game companies in the Bay Area. So I applied to all of them and got a call from Namco. And got my first job making the game at Namco.
Localization. And what era was this? What games? Name drop some games you worked on.
So the first game that I actually worked on is Tales of Destiny 2. That was cool.
Cool.
I mean, that was the first game to get dropped in and you just, started working on it. And
Was that a 8-4 joint? Did 8-4?
No.
Okay.
That was pre.
But you moved the Tales games to 8-4.
Symphonia.
Right?
Yeah, Symphonia.
Starting with Symphonia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't keep those fucking things apart. I'm sorry.
No, I don't.
No?
I work on them, but I don't.
They're still coming out.
Yeah.
Well, you're still making them.
Oh, so I still play them.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So
God bless
you. Thank you for the translations.
That's fucking awesome.
No, it works on two different Tales. Yeah, there's two different mobile phone games in the Tales universe. If you guys are interested, you should check them out. Tales of the Rays and Tales of Link.
What was the last one?
What?
Tales of Wank?
The
Link.
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 Well, that's better.
So the
we digress.
Yeah. There's a funny story because Peter Garza, who also worked at
friend of the show,
also worked at Namco back in the days.
And now who works at Ubisoft.
That's right.
That's right. He's come back to the fold.
I've gently coerced him to join the dark side.
Yes. Yeah.
No, so he and I, before I left, we were just going through and going, okay, so what are we going to call a future Tales series? And we listed up 10 different just potential names.
Yeah.
And we were just getting silly.
Yeah, I don't know. Fucking Symphonia.
Yeah, no. it was after Symphonia.
Vesperia,
so these just ridiculous names.
Yeah.
And then we submitted it to the team in Japan and they used pretty much all of them. One at a time.
Do you have any more of these names? They're really
Can
amazing.
You say which ones specifically?
No, I don't remember at this point, but I remember going wait.
You should just look at the
Peter and I
wall.
Came up with that list, and they're just going one by one. I swear to God,
was Exilia one of them? Do you know?
It might have been. It
that
might
sounds
have been.
Like no. one where you're kind of running out.
No,
of names.
Really,
no way.
Because we're like, no way they're going to use this. Like,
so
they actually used some of them.
When you were at, was it? It was already Namco Bandai at that point, or was it just Namco?
No, I left shortly after they merged.
Okay,
and so yeah,
so it was just Namco when you started.
That's right.
Okay, and so you were doing. Localization stuff, production stuff.
So
overseeing voice recording stuff.
Yeah, I mean mostly Luke.
Okay.
But in terms of the Soul Calibur team, they really took me in, and I actually spent quite a lot of time in Japan, months at a time.
Which Soul Calibur was it that at the time?
The one that
with Yoda.
I spent
and shit?
Most of the time was yeah. okay. Soul Calibur 2.
That was Soul Calibur 2, right?
Yeah. Which is the best one still.
What was that like? Yeah. So that's kind of interesting because at that time, like, Soul Calibur was not yet a franchise. Soul Calibur 1 obviously had really, really great cred from the Dreamcast, but was not
in arcades as well.
In arcades, yeah, that's true. But so you were there. What were the three? There was Yoda. Mm-hmm. Was there Spawn?
Spawn was the other one.
All right. And what was it? The other one was Link.
Was Kratos?
No, I thought we had Darth Vader in there, too.
Yeah, I thought Darth Vader. Maybe that's a different...
That's three.
So three. Okay. Then they expanded it.
Yeah. So was Link 3, too?
So Link was the other one.
Okay.
For the GameCube, right?
For two,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, for two.
Okay.
And then Spawn was Xbox. Yeah. Right?
Of course. Like, which one of these is not like the others? Yeah. Like, come on. Like, you two out of three is not bad. I mean, it's a good batting average, but yeah.
Yeah.
I
mean, and then Heihachi was for the PS.
Ah, okay.
That's the exclusive.
Oh, okay.
That's because a deal fell through on that one.
Oh.
There's supposed to be somebody else.
Really? What? Can you say who that was supposed to be?
I think it's been long enough.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think so,
you know,
too.
If Namco comes back to me, I'm like, I don't... Oh, wait, was it? No, it's been so long.
I'm an EP at Ubisoft. What are you going to do? You're untouchable now. You're untouchable. You're a made man of the mob.
Because originally, apparently, they were working out a deal with Cloud. Actually,
which is a fucking genius move.
I know, it would have been incredible,
it's
right?
Genius, yeah,
it
absolutely. Incredible. And they're like, no, we need him for Air Guys. Like, he's
no,
taken.
And like apparently, like at God the last ring. Minute, at the last minute, it fell
through.
Canned.
Oh man,
and that is heart wrenching. Okay, well then they're
I'm gonna get a call from Namco, aren't I?
They're for probably fine. So what was that like? So at the time you were spending a lot of time in Japan and you were on the localization stuff, or did they start to get into like...
So while I was in Japan, you know, I got to be pretty ingrained with the team, involved in the day-to-day, and like, you know, just, you know, they're coming to me asking a lot of information about, okay, how do we make this work in the U.S.? You know, what do we have to do? And so getting involved at that level really helped me see, you know, what it takes to actually make games.
Mm. Like a broader kind of culturalization, like, how is this character going to come off?
Right.
Are the boobs big enough, not too big on
Are
this
they jiggly
one?
Enough?
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, but beyond that, just, you know, seeing, you know, day-to-day, like, you know, watching the animators actually turn... you know, all the moves into the game, and like, it's incredible the detail that they go into.
Were those guys working like 20-hour days and like crazy?
Oh, I mean, they have
old school Japanese dev.
Oh, like it was
hours.
I mean, those times. Yeah. I mean, you know, myself included. I mean, we did crazy.
It was crazy
hours.
Time,
I mean,
right?
I mean, people had like zabuton like right under their bed.
Yeah.
So right under their desks, and they would basically sleep there for a few hours and then get up. And I did the same. I mean, at work, you know, even at San Jose, where the office was located, I mean, I had like a sleeping bag under my desk.
Oh, the good old days.
Yeah.
The good old days. So you paid your dues at Namco.
I did.
Roughly through what era? Do you remember what your last game was?
So the last game that I was involved on before I left was... So I didn't finish Soul Calibur 3.
Okay, so around that timing.
I did start working on it.
Okay. And then
to Sony.
Sony. Right.
Yeah, Sony Santa Monica.
Mm.
But that was for both external development as well as localization. So
what are some of the titles that you oversaw while you're there?
So the first game that I actually worked on there was Shadow of the Colossus. Mm-hmm. But that was... I think I worked on it for about 40 minutes.
No, take credit for that.
You
what
made
are you
the
doing?
Whole game.
No,
what
no,
are you
actually,
doing? That's that is the game you want to take credit on.
Oh, I know, but I was
boss was the one that you made.
Oh yeah,
right.
No,
they cut
no, but I was only involved like for a very short amount
of
time.
So you were at the end of it.
I think I was just somebody sent me a Excel doc and can you just translate this? I'm like, oh sure, yeah. What is this? Like, oh, it's for this game that they're working on. I'm like, all right, here we go. 40 minutes. There you go.
Here.
It's done.
There you go. Yeah, whatever crap game that's for. Who cares?
It's all the poetry, right?
It was all the so all that is my fault. So if anything's bad, that's all
great.
Me. I'm sorry.
So which part of the game? What are you saying?
No, like. All the text.
Wow,
that.
Really?
Yeah, that was on me. But
it took 40 minutes to do all that. Well, I guess there's not a lot of text in that game.
It's really short.
It's
I think the total number of lines is like, I think it was 200 cells that I actually had to translate.
Oh wow! Okay.
I mean, you know, and I was just going. I mean, the poem was the only one that I was, you know, I had to think about.
You sweat
a little bit because I couldn't figure out like what is he saying?
Mm.
Like, oh.
Roughly, I guess that would be like 1,500 emoji, 2,000 emoji?
Yeah, probably. Something like that.
Damn, that's small.
So what else while you were at Sony?
Then I worked on Rogue Galaxy, of course, mm-hmm. which you guys were in.
Yes. 8-4 joint, yeah. Yep. I was not here at that time, but neither that was like right as I was. Yep. Yeah, that was right before I came in.
Otherwise, Jeanne d'Arc.
Mm-hmm.
Another 8-4.
Tourist Trophy, which was the bike racing game.
That's right.
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 From Polyphony.
Yeah.
What else did I do?
Basically anything first party that was coming from Japan,
yeah.
you were handling,
yep.
right?
Yep.
And a lot of that 8-4 was doing by proxy. You were feeding a lot of... 8-4 was kind of your boy. 8-4 became your boy.
Oh, it was. I mean, it was
had turned.
Yes.
John was your slave.
That's right.
That's right.
That's
you know,
right.
I can have those conversations with John. You didn't deliver. Come on, man.
This is late.
I was expecting more.
Right?
I was expecting more from
expecting
you.
Expecting more faster.
I'm
Come
disappointed.
On. Step it up.
I just want you to know that.
Step it up. That was before I got here. Let's just put that out there.
Yeah.
That was before I got here and shit got in order.
No,
and,
but,
and JJ yeah. and Roy. Yeah.
No, but in all honesty, though, I mean, you guys were the best. I mean, in terms of...
Where?
I'm sorry. Still, sorry.
There you go.
Sorry.
Good,
you guys are the best.
Good yeah. correction.
I'm sorry.
Good
you guys
correction.
Are the best.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Japanese version, South Park, Fractured But Whole, cha-ching. Write it down, JJ.
I have a friend who is a huge it. South Park fan and speaks English.
They're proof positive right there. All right. So, and then just to round it out, so you're at Sony for a spell.
Yeah.
And then
after that, I got a call from... Ubisoft saying, hey, we want somebody to oversee the third-party development over at Ubisoft San Francisco. And so it sounded interesting. I did some third-party development at Sony as well, so I said, okay, cool. You know, let's give it a shot.
Yep.
And so I went up, and I had been told when I joined Ubisoft, like, we're, you know, you're going to be working on some casual games. You know, at the time, like, DS was king, right?
Oh, yeah.
And oh, so
DS and the, Wii.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So all the Pets titles and, like,
yeah,
Imagine
Ballerina.
Ballerina.
Makeup Star, artist.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. All those titles. But then
Pets Hamster's Bunch.
These are all 8-4 hits.
Some
these
of the
are
best.
All 8-4
some
classics.
Of the best. And I like how these games are, like, the prequel to what is to come in South Park Fractured But Whole. Because one of the writers...
Oh, okay.
On those
I was
games,
like, where the hell are you
one
going
one of the writers
with this?
On those games went on to...
That is true. That is very true. You guys yeah. probably don't even know
no,
this.
No, I don't know this
yes,
one.
Yes, that's right. The Hamster's Bunch, which is like
yeah.
one of the best box arts of all time.
Yes.
Of all time.
Yes.
And ballet makeup artist
yeah.
and ballet was the ballet is can we look at it here
it's,
somewhere
it's been all disorganized because you couldn't like
those are actually some of the most fun games it's down there at the bottom
imagine
ballet star there
thank
we go
you. Are actually incredibly localized and a friend of the show Sir Crispin Boyer who
yes.
also did some work I think on Fractured But Whole cut his teeth on those games where those
there
were
we
his
go.
First
Yep.
writing jobs
I didn't
his
know
first
that.
Localization jobs yeah and he fucking destroyed them he like knocked them out of the park those are the most amazing written games that you will never ever hear about ever like
yeah.
honest to God to this day and we used to talk about
yeah.
these to potential clients it was like actually those games were some of the most fun because you were not doing the same you know like I would regularly look up a Japanese word that would be a sword name that Final Fantasy XI only had used because Final Fantasy XI has like 10,000 swords and
yeah.
it's like okay how the fuck am I gonna make this interesting this is a sword that has been in 600 other games before
yep.
And you get bored writing the same fantasy whatever trope games even for some big series but
yeah.
like there it was like okay, I have to make a boy like me, and I have to figure out how to rewrite this section where getting tan is a terrible thing. Like, I fell asleep in the sun. Yeah, oh yeah. Makeup. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Makeup artist was like half of the Japanese version was like, oh my god, I'm dark,
oh, that's yeah.
I'm dark
yeah,
brown.
Yeah, yeah.
This is
yes.
terrible.
Yeah, right.
Please make me whiter again. Like. Okay, how do we, like, rewrite that?
Yeah.
Like, so that it's not so...
Kind
no.
of a minefield. It was actually super, super fun. So, yeah, we're going to get to South Park, I promise.
Good.
We almost kind of
got to it.
We're going to get to South
there.
Park eventually. I swear. Okay, so yeah, so you came into Ubisoft and you were doing these third party games,
getting involved with, you know, at the time we had Ubisoft Nagoya and Osaka, so helping out with titles that are developed there.
Yeah, Nagoya,
Well, we consolidated everybody to Osaka after, because it just didn't make sense to have both studios with, you know, small number of people.
Right.
But then, you know, it got to a point where at the time, so Paul Cross and I were basically partners in crime. So he's our studio game director.
Mm.
And he, you know, he and I were chatting and, you know, saying, like, we're here, like, all the time. Mm. You know, our wives are getting pretty ticked off at us,
right?
And you know, actually, you know, threatening to say, okay, if you don't come back home soon, you're not gonna have a wife to come back to,
right?
You know, that kind of thing. And so we approached our boss and asked him, like, so what if we had a small team here in San Francisco to make games?
Which at that time there was no team in San Francisco.
No, it was only for third parties. So
right.
You know, we had producers following, and we had game designers to help, and we also had a tech director, you know, to lend some technical expertise, but other than that, we were
You
know, basically
no original development happening in San Francisco. Yeah,
so we got the approval to start a small team, but
before you had the idea of what they were going to do, or did you?
So we actually said, hey, we actually have some ideas on games that we want to make, and our boss Laurent, he said, that's great. First, I want you to work on this, and that was Rocksmith.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or that's what became Rocksmith. At the time, it was called Guitar Rising. It was this. It was a prototype that detected guitar notes, and so it was really cool. Like,
interesting.
You know, it could detect single notes and you know what you're playing, and so you know. But they were struggling figuring out how to turn that into a, you know, a multi-million selling product.
Right.
And so the mission that we were given was, turn it into a million seller, and then we can talk about the future.
Mm, interesting,
Neither of us played the guitar.
No pressure.
That's the amazing part. It's like, neither of you played the guitar, but it's actually kind of perfect in that way, right?
Because it
was. Let's make something that teaches you how to play the guitar from nothing.
Right, and so if the two people who are in charge of it know nothing about it, nothing about how to play the guitar, if we could learn how to play the guitar, then we were doing something right.
And
right.
The other interesting part is, this is as... I mean, Guitar Hero, fucking Rock Band are just tanking hard, right? I mean, is the time. So, the timing is like, okay, we're going to make one of those games now. Like, the timing on the face of it, on paper, like, could not have been worse.
Well, it actually, the idea started at the peak, though. It was peak, you know, Guitar Hero, Rock Band, where, you know, they were moving millions and millions of units. And, you know, that's when they were releasing, like, multiple a year, too, right? Different artist packs and things like that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and, that was the industry at the time. It was, like, the face of the industry. It was everything. It was Beatles, and it was the Gamers.com era of guitar.
Absolutely. And so,
but it went completely bust while you were still
development. So we started making it, and then the bottom fell out of the industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got a lot of pressure from, you know, everywhere saying, like, why are you guys doing this?
Yeah, like,
you know,
I went to the Salvation Army. It's filled with fucking plastic controllers.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, are you sure this is the right idea?
Yeah.
And we're like, no, this is going to work. This is going to be great. And so it was a lot of internal marketing in order to gain that support.
Sure.
But we had, you know, we were skeptical as well. Like, you know, what's going to happen? Like, I think it was one of the most nerve-wracking launches ever for me, because
there was an expensive accessory that you had to get either with the guitar or you had to put on the guitar.
Oh yeah, I mean,
right.
First you had to buy a real guitar.
Right.
I mean, that's a pretty big hurdle to overcome. It's like, it's not just the game; you have to buy, you know, $100, $200. $500 guitar.
Right. I remember when we were doing the game, like, a lot of the times when we localize stuff, we'll get development kits or, like, whatever from devs.
That's right.
We got an actual guitar.
Yeah.
Like, a real ass
that
guitar.
That was awesome. Yeah.
It was, like, just over there in the corner.
And that was a hard game. We had to find somebody. It's like, okay, who is going to know this shit, like, backwards and forwards?
Yeah.
But, like, that was also the genius of that game, was that it was, unlike all those other games, it was actually going to teach you how to play the fucking guitar by the end of it.
It actually worked.
Yeah.
And that's the, I think that's, that's why it actually did as well as it did.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, because it actually
It did really well,
oh,
right?
Yeah. It did four million spectacular copies and counting.
Damn.
It's
fucking A.
Still selling. I mean,
wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, good for you.
Never doubt the power of educational software.
Yeah, and so people saw edutainment, JJ, some people call it. So they saw that, and they said, okay, fucking A, you did it. Now we're going to make an in-house studio here in San Francisco.
Well, I mean, over time, we naturally grew, because, yeah, you know, as the project needed more people, we said, hey, we need to hire more people, and they're like, yeah, go for it. And, you know, that's actually during the first title, mm-hmm, we brought in Jason, and got him involved in helping us deliver the product.
The first title, The First Rocksmith.
The First Rocksmith.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so how did you get then involved with, like, were you already at Ubisoft at that time?
No, Now recruited me away from a Activision developer, Vicarious Visions in Albany, New York.
Oh, okay.
So, and the most relevant things there is I had worked on Guitar Hero 3 for the Wii, and then a little bit of touching some of the other Guitar Hero products, and then I did Guitar Hero for iPhone.
Okay.
Nice. And then...
And you were on stage.
I was on stage at WWDC with Steve Jobs.
Oh, wow. Shit!
That's pretty cool.
2010.
Nice.
And then...
Wait, quick. Yeah. Any Steve Jobs stories? Look aside.
When you're... So, I mean, you can watch the 2010 WWDC when we have the game rocking up there.
Yeah.
You know, it's still just... It's that era of iPhone games.
Right.
And... we never really ever got to hear direct feedback from Steve Jobs. It was always through other people, and they'd say,
okay,
Steve really liked it when you sort of banged your head a little bit. don't overdo it. But he really liked the energy that brought. And I was like,
nice.
When did that happen? Oh no! I hope I did it right. Like, it was just it was constant pins and needles. God. And he never really spoke to me. He spoke to my boss at the time, Kardik. So he kind of was
interesting.
I want to get someone who just talks to other people for me.
Oh, my God. And to the point where I was there for 2 weeks for rehearsals and prep and all this stuff.
Two weeks.
Jesus. And
they're serious.
God damn. No wonder they're so good at that shit.
Yeah, for sure. And you don't, like, the whole time you're on pins and needles, you don't know if you're going to go on stage. Because, you know, we don't know if we're going to have to cut for time. We don't know what we're going to have to do. And so you're like, okay, I'm just going to be here rehearsing.
Right.
Hopefully, like, and so I had to do it. I did it real. We didn't, like, you know, just have the build autoplay. So I had to play the Guitar Hero game on the iPhone. It was crazy pressure. And I was, like, begging the team back in New York. I was like, just make it so it wins.
Yes.
So in case I don't, they're like, oh, yeah, we could. But, you know, oh, there's a bug in it right now, so we really can't get you a new build.
Oh, what? Those assholes.
So if you, total behind the scenes is I was on stage rehearsing. Steve was watching that one. My hands go totally cold. I start having sticky fingertips from nerves.
Yes.
And so I'm dragging across the screen, and I end up with 4 out of 5 stars. And
unacceptable.
Someone comes up to the stage like, Steve would really like you to get 5 stars.
I love it.
So I start talking to, like,
it.
The crew.
No pressure.
Yeah.
No pressure.
No, if you can't do it.
But yeah.
But you know, Apple doesn't do 4-star products.
Like, oh, so good. That's the episode name. Fucking mark it. That's the episode name.
So we, I talked to, like, stage people, and I was like, what can I do? And this lady's like, you can put baby powder on your hands, like sort of a talcum powder will dry them up. And so somebody runs up to a store, gets that, I try that, I play through, get 5 stars, it's fine. And then someone else comes up and they say, you got a little bit of baby powder on the devices. You're going to need to find a way to do this without leaving any residue. And so I rehearsed the crap out of that with baby powder on my fingertips at, like, super behind the scenes, jumping on a bed in my hotel room trying to, like, make myself.
Oh, yeah.
I can still get... I got 5 stars on that thing as I was, like, running around
you
a hotel room.
Do you remember what song was it?
It was Band of Skulls... Diamonds and Pearls, which was another big thing about how do we choose a song that's hip for Apple, because but all the guys, like all the executives are like, you should put Rolling Stones on there. It's like, well, that costs money to do.
Yeah, and
the
right, yeah.
Band of Skulls is a cool hip band that is willing to do this.
Right. When you hear the song now, does your hand just start sweating?
I know.
They're still a great band. Check out Band of Skulls.
Wow. Okay. That is a fucking awesome story. Yeah. That is an awesome story. All right, so were you...
So yeah, now saw that performance. I was like, I gotta get that guy.
Gotta get that guy.
I like this kid.
He got 5 stars
He's
for Steve Jobs.
He did.
I won 5 stars.
His assistant.
Right.
What, was that your first industry job then at Vicarious Visions?
Yeah, Vicarious was my first industry job.
And did you get into it because you were musically inclined?
I got
somehow?
Into it because I wanted to get into games. And cool. So I was doing project management for web development before that.
But in your free time, you were playing a lot of Tales games.
I was. Yeah. And Dragon Quest and a lot of the Level 5 products. Now read me his resume. It was one point I was like, loved it.
Yeah.
And he's like... it has so many flaws. Just like any developer that works on anything, you're like, oh, you saw my work. Totally. Oh, it's terrible.
It's only the bad parts.
Yep.
So now lured you away from the East Coast and from Vicarious Visions to work on Rocksmith, which is a good fit because you were doing Guitar Hero stuff at the time.
Yep.
Rocksmith, smash success, does great. Then how do you guys get from there to South Park?
So... while we were making Rocksmith, at our studio, we were also working with Obsidian for Stick of
Truth.
On
the first game. Right.
And so we had a producer on our side and designers following the project. And, you know, it was, as you know, it was a tough project.
Storied, yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Development. As Matt and Trey have gone on the record saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's right.
It was the first time they had, like... gone back into actually trying to make a game. They basically had said, okay, the graphics now are at the point where we can actually make something that looks like the show, so we're going to care about the game again. And like reading interviews with them, they were saying like they just had no reference point for what a game is. They just like wrote like some 800 page script or something, like had all these crazy ideas, we're going to include every character and everything, and then just had to cut. I think they said it was like 6 months of Tuesdays, basically, which was like for South Park was their last like stressful day before a new episode comes out, and they did it like it was crazy, but it was like a learning experience, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I think for everybody,
right?
But especially for them, I mean, you know, they had not gotten involved on game production to that capacity in the past,
right? They had all those shitty N64 like games back in the day where they were just like, oh, just sign this away and somebody will license it and
then tower defense game, right?
The tower defense game they put some love into. I mean, you can kind of see it in there, but there's the era of South Park merchandising where it's like, well, we're not going to be around that long, and so you can kind of see like, you know,
cash in
and then realizing
which is
like
late 90s basically,
and then I think that what they've said is they saw their own stuff around and was like, this is crap. And so they kind of brought in all of that brand management internally so that they could trust it and watch it more closely. So the quality of things went up a lot.
Right.
And I think that, on the tower defense one was on 360, and I think that was kind of their, it looks pretty good. Yeah, it kind of looks like our animation. It kind of looks like our show. And I think that kind of sparked Trey to be like, I want to make a real one.
Right. So then, Stick of Truth, and then THQ started it. They go, that happens, and then Ubisoft comes in, and you guys match, and you're like, oh yeah, we actually share similar sensibilities.
Right.
We're going to make it.
Ended up taking over, or close to a year after, to finish the game.
Right.
And, you know, I was looking at it from afar, you know, I was... managing the producer working on it, but it was really from afar.
Right.
She was owning it, and she, you know, she was building a good relationship and rapport with the studio, and actually with Obsidian as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they managed to get it out. But then after they got it out, I think everybody was exhausted.
Mm, right.
You know?
Sure.
It just burned out. It was one of those. They are burned out. Mm. And they stepped back and were like, okay, maybe we're not gonna work on another one, but then
they were like, oh, let's do a movie instead or something. Right. They were like, what's our next big project? Right. Or
it but was then, just, yeah. I think after they saw the critical reception and also the consumer feedback of how much they loved it, you know, they said, okay, maybe it wasn't that bad. You know, like maybe we'll do it again.
Right.
And I think that really helped And you know, we started talking again, and they said, "Okay, we want to do, we want to make another one." So we were surprised, and we said, "Okay, okay,
yeah, all right, that's cool."
But one of the conditions was that they wanted to work directly with Ubisoft, and so you know, we were looking at what studio could work on it. And you know, at the time,
Morocco or like
or Montreal, Quebec. Right, you know,
yeah. Sure. They need to get the sense of humor. They need to be able to show up at their studio within a matter of moments,
right? And those were the you know, the conditions that they were saying is that, you know, you got to make yourself available.
Yeah.
You know, at a moment's notice, because, you know,
they want to make it more like they make the show,
right?
Where it's like, so what is it called? Six days.
Six days to air.
The documentary about South Park. If you haven't seen it, it's fascinating. But like South Park is very much like Saturday Night Live in that it's created afresh every week, and it's like, yeah. So they completely throw away. They've tried to do it where they like think of bigger ideas and it. And like pre-bake show ideas, and there's like, oh, it just doesn't work, and they end up throwing it away, and that's why it can be so topical and whatever. But the work is, it's kind of crazy, like the schedule, and they treat their people well, but I think it's also they give their people like months off. I mean, while the season is going, the people there actually that work on the animation work like just crazy hours, right?
Yeah.
Well, they do September to December, and they get 10 episodes out in that time.
Okay.
And then the cool thing about the game for a lot of people was that during those off seasons, some of them would moonlight on other projects, you know, go to a visual effects company or, you know, some their own personal projects
comedy
and
writing,
stuff like that. And then they would kind of come back just for the show. And then all of a sudden this game is here. And then we're like, hey, you know, if we're really going to do this like co-development, you know, basically your animators would be really useful on the game. Your technical directors, which are like their 3D artists, would be really useful on the game. And so some folks that were into it, like instead of, you know, summer gigging away from South Park, they just stayed on South Park.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And they helped out on the game.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, I mean, it's pretty apparent from the show, but like there's a lot of gamers. I mean, starting of course with Matt and Trey, but like there's a lot of gamers on the team there, right? Like they understand. You don't have to explain everything as you would maybe a typical like licensed kind of game. Right?
They ask good
like
questions.
They kind of get it.
I won't say any names, but I've worked with licensors where you have to sit there and explain why this character needs to do this. It's like, well, why does he have to have a gun? It's like, well, your brand has him with a gun.
Right.
And the game kind of, you know, that would make sense, right? They're like, well, we don't really think that's a good idea. Okay.
So the South Park guys were coming off the traumatic experience of Stick of Truth, but I mean, as Ubisoft, you guys also coming off the we can't have that happen again that way? I'm assuming you guys were coming at it from that perspective as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and so, you know, we talked with them at length about, you know, the things that caused, or at least in their minds, you know, things that became issues and how they got to that and how we can improve that process. And, you know, I think the number one thing that, you know, it's always the case, right? It's communication.
Communication, yeah. Communication. I was going to guess that was what you were going to say. Yeah. Well, what's their beef now looking back? And of course, hindsight is 2020, but if you had to summarize what was, you know, their, because Stick of Truth, I think, was received pretty well.
Oh yeah,
in general, it's
a good game.
Well, right, and yeah, but it wasn't what they had envisioned. They've said so. What if you had to summarize what was it lacking that then was like became a mission statement for Fractured But Whole?
Well, I think that what Trey had to give up that he really kind of pushed on quickly with us was that at times he wanted to try to make a specific joke or a specific point, or he wanted to have a specific kind of mini game. And he's like, if I bring it up early and often, it matters to me, even if it doesn't necessarily, you know, seem like it seems like it's on the periphery. And I think that like, our taking a shit minigame is like this perfect example of like it doesn't, you know, from a traditional games perspective, it's just a thing that you can get on a toilet and take a shit. Yeah. But for him, he's like, I just want this thing to work. I just have this thing in my head. And I think that, you know, when you're a typical game developer working on your own kind of priorities of what a game needs, you start to deprioritize that stuff.
And, right.
And that's the things where it's just like, I want you to understand what things matter to me.
Right.
And so we have A+ take a shit minigame.
I took that as like a commentary on like the ubiquitous like lock picking minigame every game, which is or hacking sometimes it turns into that, but the like
hacking pick, which is why I thought picking, it was funny taking a dump.
But yeah. those get you something, right? Does the poop minigame get you an item or something that is useful later on?
Prestige.
Yeah.
Okay. But it also
just like real life.
You get biohazard ingredients for your crafting.
And at the end, you use the analog sticks to pinch the loaf.
Yep.
I like how analogous that motion is with butts clenched.
Yep. Exactly the same.
Yep. Yep.
And that's something that he really wanted, right, Trey?
Well, it's always about sort of like working out a poop and like really kind of like dancing around on the toilet and really trying. And then sort of just the struggle and showing that there's some skill involved and not just letting it be like on and off, like that you have to kind of like there's a more successful shit than just.
Yeah, not everybody.
It's not binary, guys. It's analog shitting.
So Jason, did you come at this from already being a South Park fan, or did you come at this from this is going to be my job, therefore?
Huge South Park fan, for sure. And I think that the idea of meeting them, I like was like, oh, well, they loved the producer from the last project, so that was a big deal. Mm. And so I was like, well, I'm just going to kind of introduce myself, and she's going to be, the main point of contact.
Yeah.
And so I was just this shy guy in the room that tried not to stand out too much. And, careers are funny. People move around, and I ended up in the position of saying, well, I'm going to be your main point of contact from here on.
Yeah.
And there was like, we really liked Rika.
Oh, no.
But I got through that.
They did say that.
Yeah.
They did say that.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Steve wants me to get 5 stars. But I guess now I had recruited me for those moments. So I guess I kind of, put my fanboy stuff aside. Because the main thing that they need is just know that somebody's being honest and trying to, like, this is what I actually need. This is the actual deadline that I need it at.
Right.
And
as a fan, though, that has to be really difficult where you are saying to these creators who you hold in high esteem about their creation.
Right.
That they are now, like, they are bringing to your medium that is your specialty, and you have to be able to do this.
Yeah.
But you have to tell them sometimes either no or, like, yes, but, or those kinds of things. So, like, I mean, that had to be incredibly intimidating, especially at first.
Yes.
Yeah. So no how doubt. Do you handle that? How do you negotiate that?
Baby powder, obviously.
Baby powder. Helps and lots of baby powder.
With my own everywhere else.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry for all the baby powder I'm leaving all over your stuff, by the way. I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, you can see this because of the podcast, but
so that's what all that white
is. Yeah, yeah. My courage powder.
Baby powder.
Yep. Yeah. I think that, just like anyone that you guys probably work with as well, if you admire the stuff that they do, like if you can show that you respect it and kind of get it, then and you have a respect for sort of the craft they bring to it, that they'll respond in kind. And I think that's really the biggest thing. Is just it wasn't like, look, man, your shit joke doesn't matter. Let me tell you what matters. Like that, those words would never come out of my mouth because they're not what I feel and not what I think, but they also not going to get me anywhere.
Yeah. Right.
No, I think you did a great job in terms of, really gaining their respect in kind. And so because of the fact that he was also very respectful to them as well. And so I think, that's the reason why we were successful in delivering this. because otherwise I don't think it would have happened, honestly.
So and they're super ridiculously hands-on, right? Like
well, that was part of the condition of it, right?
Like, yeah.
we wanted to make the most authentic South Park game ever,
right?
And they wanted to not have this be a typical licensor relationship where they kind of came in at the beginning, said what they wanted,
right,
reviewed a couple key milestones, and then gave final approval. They wanted to make it like the show. And so for us, that was, okay, well, that means you have to be involved, and that means that we need to, you're going to be kind of, you know, these co-dev creative directors.
Right.
And it comes with a lot of time commitment and,
so they had been through the first game, but are you still, if not, well, I don't want to like put it in a way that makes it seem like they're superior or whatever, but I mean, you have to be teaching them about game development to some extent, where it's like, well, we can't do that, and the reason is because it actually takes longer than,
yeah.
It's not like animation because of
this. But
we
were on
that.
A new engine and stuff like that, so there definitely was some education there in terms of, well, I mean, even for us.
Is it
to
a
like,
custom engine you guys
it was
using?
We used Snowdrop, which is developed by the Massive team,
okay.
And used to launch The Division, and now
okay.
Mario plus Rabbids, or Rabbids
oh,
plus
did,
Mario.
It's a great also. Game, by the way. Not even saying that because you guys work for Ubisoft.
We'll talk about that on the yes. the podcast proper.
It is a great game.
Yeah, it's a great game.
Like, and as a fellow Ubisoft game that's sort of tactical based and stuff like that, I think that like a licensed tactical, cool, colorful game on Snowdrop. Like we definitely have some overlap,
yeah.
But
sure.
I love seeing sort of the alternate universe that they have where like they went more XCOM and we went
yeah.
Our own hybrid of turn-based with movement.
Yeah, what would you? I'm curious though. So you've obviously played a lot of old school RPGs, JRPGs, etc. The first South Park was seemingly more like quintessential JRPG inspired.
Right. Yeah.
With the new game and the more tactical. I guess you would call it
yeah.
combat. Mm-hmm. What would you say? What influenced that? What if there's other games or?
Lots of different influences. I think that we some of it was just practical and trying to solve the problem of making it feel like you're really in an episode. You're exploring this space, and then we don't never really teleport you to another
right.
sort of proxy space,
right?
But. That became this sort of dissonance where a second ago I was walking around this space and now I can no longer walk. And so it's like, well, can't we just have some movement and turn-based? And it's like, well, that's tactics.
Right.
And so we kind of looked at how would we do that? And we kind of, like, I think the reason that we're sort of cagey about saying tactics is because I don't want to give people the impression that it's like a
crazy hardcore tactics
yeah. menu. It's
course,
like really
yeah.
oh, I got to do
job
a bunch of predictive stuff.
It's
gonna,
very light.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a grid, but it's like barely there. It's very
yeah.
big. There's like nine
it's,
or 12
I mean,
squares.
Imagine a bunch of 10-year-olds basically all run onto a grid and start running around punching each other, and you're pretty close.
That's, but so when that decision is made, what games do you start to look at and be like, okay, who did it right? Who did it? What do I want to take from here? Not that you aped any game, but like, what are yeah. the kind of touchstone games that you go to and look at?
A lot of the inspiration is actually board game based.
Interesting.
That like, if you look at things like Dead of Winter or Star Wars Imperial Assault and stuff like that, and sort of the movement of characters around a map, and in sort of this 2D top-down way that you kind of look at the world in those games,
yeah.
That's what Trey plays, and that's what he gets.
Right.
So when we would kind of come up with our own more gamey concepts, he'd be like, I get that, but South Park's simpler than that. Can't we kind of push more this way?
So right. that's why I didn't have a Tales of style like fighting game a battle system where like everybody's being juggled by Cartman for 10 minutes.
So we talked about that
yeah.
as well. In terms of real time, it's really hard to deliver comedy when you're concentrating
True.
On trying to do, you know, just imagine a fighting game where you're trying to put in like, you know, land jokes at the same time, and it just doesn't work because you're so focused on, you know, just getting the controls right and the timing right. And that by going with a turn-based, you really can hit those jokes, joke moments.
Right. That's also something I wanted to ask about. So comedy, so much of it is timing, like to the point where Valve had their writers time their jokes, like would actually go into the code and time the jokes so they could tweak it themselves and blah, 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 blah. But writing comedy for games, first of all, it's a pretty rare thing, and then even more rare that it's actually pulled off. So, like, I'm curious, you know, the particular challenges that kind of posed. I mean, two that I can think of is one, that the timing of jokes and, like, the disagreement of, like, oh, no, this is way funnier if he waits another 5 seconds or whatever. Mm-hmm. Who's making those decisions? Is it the writers? Is it Trey and Matt, et cetera? And then two is you're hearing these jokes, like, 1,000 times.
Yeah.
So, like, they cease to become funny around time number two, whatever joke it is, however funny it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you determine? Is it just whatever your initial reaction is? Like, how do you determine something, what is actually funny when you're hearing it in different phases and different forms 100 times in game development?
The who and the timing is... That's a lot of how we iterated with them. Like, because part of it also with the show is that you'll
see... Them being
see,
Matt and Trey.
And Trey. A lot of things are also music, cameras, timings. There's lots of different sort of ingredients that go into, like, making sure that, you know, that moment hits just right. But, you know, I think that our own team got a good sense of it as well by learning from their cutscenes and learning from the points of feedback that they gave. But then, I mean, I think that one thing that I think is really interesting about doing comedy for games at this point, and one of the huge advantages we had, is we have that team in that group that have surpassed that 10,000 hour rule in terms of, you know, their tipping point of being great at
the Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like this is a comedian who's a master of his craft, and often when you have a game developer trying to do comedy, that's their comedy thing is their side thing,
right?
You
right.
know, I'm an amazing designer. I'm a great system designer. I'm a programmer. Right. Maybe I'm a writer for games, but comedy is probably secondary to what I consider to be my craft, and it's sort of the opposite for him. So we totally can lean into him sort of as a master. Mm-hmm. But that means like trying to be open to what he's bringing.
Mm.
You had a second question. Sorry.
No. Well, it was just saying you're hearing the same joke like 100 times or whatever. Yeah. And how do you?
I'm such a stupid fan that I still laugh. So.
It is surprising though. Like some of those
even though you know
scenes,
they're coming and they're,
We must have watched it, what, 300, 400 times by now?
Yeah.
And you still chuckle. I mean, you're not getting the, you know...
Sure, yeah, but you still...
Right, you're not in stitches like you were the first, you know, dozen
Which
times
I think
or
is,
whatever, but...
That does distort your perception of how you think other people are going to respond to the game.
Right.
You start to think, like, oh, people are going to have a sort of a wry smile as they play this game, and then you actually watch people play it for the first time, and then they're belly laughing. They're just, like, full on...
Nice.
They're like, oh, yeah, that's what it was like the first time we saw that.
Did you do a bunch of user testing?
Absolutely.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, and that really helps, because it helps hone in on what's working and what's not, and, like, yeah. And it does keep us in check in terms of, like, is this good? Like, is this okay? And then you
people
watch.
People
gonna
get this,
right?
Yeah.
And when you see their reaction, then you go, okay.
What was the most surprising thing that came out of user testing that you did not expect? Either for good or bad.
I loved seeing user feedback come back. Where the thing I was actually talking about is, do people get this? Is I feel like we're kind of ended up telling a more mature story with this one. Like, it's not quite as heavy on the alien anal probe sort of visual gags. It's actually it's a lot more like story gags. It's a lot of funny social stuff.
Right.
And like, it would come up repeatedly as, I love that it's gone in this direction. I love all of this content. It's so South Park. It's like, whew, glad they didn't just want like a butt jokes.
Right.
Exclusively butt jokes.
Yeah. The skin tones, this made news recently where like hard mode, the darker your skin tone, which is I think a fucking genius idea by the way. But where did that idea come from, and was there ever any, this is kind of a larger question for the game at all, but like where is the check, or is there a check where it's like, okay, I don't know if we're going, not that actually maybe this is a bad example about going too far, because I don't know who could interpret that badly or whatever, but I was wondering like separately who, or if there is a check about, okay, something that is maybe touching too much of a nerve or anything. Oh, okay, this might like alienate too many players or whatever or something like that. I guess that's really is two different questions. But
well, I think one of the things that surprised me was I think both Matt and Trey are very sensitive about that. You know, what is what they can make funny. What they go, no, this is crossing the line. This isn't, it's not landing the joke. It's not, right. It's no longer funny. We're just,
yeah, just, you're just being racist.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's just a sexist joke.
Right.
Like, that's not it. Like, and it's so that line of Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah, I was actually surprised by that. I thought they were just all about like, no, like just let's push.
Yeah, right.
But they're not. They have a lot more finesse than you think.
Mm. And I think that's one of those things that you kind of see with the writers and designers on the game side of things, bringing what they interpret to be, this is a South Park joke. Mm. And then you kind of like, ooh, I don't know, it doesn't really pass my own gut check.
Right.
But, you know, okay, we'll finesse it a little bit like this, and then they would make it to them, and they'd be like, okay, we can polish that.
Right.
But they would try to give notes about, you know, when Trey does a joke like that, it's very specific. And please don't.
So Matt and Trey are the final arbiters, basically.
Oh,
they were of all that kind of stuff. So we mentioned a little bit earlier, but Crispin Boyer, friend of the show, an old EGM writer, and Damian Lynn, same on both counts, did a bunch of writing for the game, and so their stuff was all going through like Matt and Trey, basically. How those guys do?
That's tens of thousands of lines.
Yeah.
Because they're doing combat quips and menu stuff, and they're doing everything.
Right.
So all that stuff goes through them in terms of they play the game, and they see it. And
they're also in the booth recording those lines, right? Because the majority of those characters have to be.
It's all voiced.
Right. And so if they're not approving it,
right,
you know,
they just say, like, wait a second, I'm not going to say this.
Yeah, I'm not going to read this.
That's going to be tough for as a writer.
That's right. Some pressure. I mean, yeah, seriously. Yeah,
the people making the decision are the ones reading the lines.
They're going to voice it.
Not only are they reading it for, like, just quality check, they're actually reading the lines. Oh, God, that's nerve-wracking.
So how'd they do? They do okay?
Yeah.
Did we train them well? Did we train them well and hand them over to you guys?
They can sure write a lot of lines and keep trying. I mean, you have to learn, right? Like,
sure.
they're not Trey Parker writing his own lines for himself for his own voice. And so I think that he's learned. They got great.
Well, and that's another thing. So I wanted to talk about, but how? So, you know, you guys got delayed a few times, and the way that the show works, and the way that Matt and Trey have to be used to working is iterative, and is, you know, as stuff changes, we adapt to it, and we just throw stuff away and then do it again, and then that sort of thing. So how do you adapt? Do you have to find a compromise? Do you have to find a common ground? Or do you just say, okay, we have to do, like, ultimately we have to just serve you guys and the material, so we'll do it until...
I think it's always what's best for the game. Sometimes that's literally what they want. Sometimes it's a negotiation of that to say, you know, I think we're close, and we can sort of reveal what that is with another week of development. But I don't know.
Mm.
That's the finesse of closing a game, I guess.
Sure.
Well, I mean, you know, any game, you know, at the end of the project, you have to go through and make some tough decisions and negotiate with
bugs
the,
and with okay, we
bugs
do
and also
this
creative
and
directors saying like,
yeah.
Oh no, I really want this.
Yeah.
Right.
But in our case, you know, we're also doing that not only on our internal side, but with
I had plenty of demands myself.
Yes. No, absolutely. I mean, you know, like you wanted a certain vision of what you know wanted from the game, and so, but there is a fine line that we have to walk. And so It was definitely a lot of negotiation, and certain decisions have to be made. And, you know, I mean, throughout the game too, I mean, as we worked on it, you know, one of the things that I think we learned is that, you know, for comedy to land, sometimes you have to just be willing to throw out
right
a lot,
right? Yep.
And like, you know, I think that's hard to do in a traditional game making,
right,
where you go like, no, but we spent so much time and it works.
Yeah,
it works. And yeah, like, nope, but it's just not, it's not working in terms of comedy, so we gotta
oh, that sounds heartbreaking. Would you guys also, I'm curious, because now, so the show more recently, excuse me, has become, maybe not serialized, but more so than before, right?
Where so the last season, yeah.
Right? Reset at every episode. So would you be watching, you know, the episode, which only gets made that week, and see it premiere and just be like, oh, fuck. Like, they just, now we have to adapt to that. They just killed that character, or they just... That I think when they new character just introduced
a couple
weird.
Seasons ago, they started gentrifying South Park, and right. PC Principal moved to town and stuff like right. that. And I think that we all looked at each other after watching that episode, and we're like, "Oh, we're going to change the town, aren't we?" Okay, that's fine. Oh, that's fine.
Were there ever right.
Kenny's
there,
house is changing for sure?
Was there ever a time where like a joke appeared in the show that you also had in the game, and you were like, "Oh, we can't use this joke now"?
No, I mean, I think we. It was more the other. Well. It was one of those things where I would see a script and be like, oh, that's really funny. And then I'd see a revision of that script and be like, huh, I wonder what happened to that joke. And then I'd see that joke in a show. And I'm like, oh. Oh, really?
That's what happened.
That's where it went.
Yeah. Cherry picked. But so that did happen, though, when you're watching the show. And you're like, oh, okay, now we have to adapt. We have to throw away a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, just starting to figure out, like, you know, it's a dance. You'd see something and be like, okay, what part of this is relevant for our story, because you yeah. know they change the town of South Park at a
right.
episode to episode as they need to, and they'll change it for the game as we need to, and so, but it's really, it's like, what about this has value for the story that we're telling,
right?
Yeah,
but that's an incredibly unique situation that you guys are in. I mean, I'm trying to think of another IP where it's like, okay, as we're developing this, even the creators of it don't know what it's going to be a week from now, much less 6 months from now, and we are going to develop this
right.
over
I don't think,
2 years.
Yeah, I think we can say we're the first to do it.
I mean, it sounds like a crazy roller coaster ride to kind of make. But you guys feel good about where you landed in terms of where the show is at, and okay, the game is going to come out here, and we're okay in terms yeah. of like matching up, and that's
super
sort of
proud
thing.
Of it. Yeah, I think that like I say, we
set
out
the funniest game of yeah. all time.
And like, yeah, I wanted to make the most authentic South Park game. I wanted to make the funniest game of all time. Make a good RPG, and I think we've hit all of it. It's quite the accomplishment. I'm patting myself on the back, but thankfully,
good job, lads.
Thankfully, I have user testing that backs me up.
That's cool. That's yeah. all important. Well, so yeah, so plug away. Like, where should people buy it, and release date, and just fucking exclusive, like the limited edition, and go ahead, plug to your fucking heart's content.
That's the global stuff.
Are you guys doing the thing where it's like, if you buy it from GameStop, you get this thing?
Mostly because that's hard for even the licensor guys to approve that
yeah.
stuff. Like, wait, I don't even get how you're breaking all this stuff up.
There's
so,
like the
so we keep
play
it simple.
Version.
Yeah. We have October 17th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC, including Steam and Uplay. Yeah, we have collector's editions and stuff. You can get a Coon Cycle, I think, on Amazon. Mm-hmm. If you want a radio-controlled Coon.
And the characters as well?
Right, we have some figurines that you guys could probably use around here to decorate.
We'll send you
yeah.
some.
Yeah, well, if there's one thing this fucking office needs...
You know what this
we
office
love our
needs.
Figures.
It's more fucking Amiibos. If you can, yeah. have, if you got any of those...
John has a problem.
That'd be a big help.
he has a problem.
They are pretty big, though. They're like... They're like
6-inch
figurines. We have 6 inches. So. We have the
smaller ones. Yep. Yeah.
And then robot.
Are these pre-order bonuses in different places, or are
yeah.
they? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. You're just gonna have to Google it, man. But I think that the we also have...
I can see the headlines now. South Park game director himself doesn't know all the pre-orders.
Because well, we have so many.
Crazy one of the things that makes it tricky is Kid Robot made figurines as well.
Oh, okay.
That are Fractured But Whole themed. And so, depending on what kind you want, like... I would encourage sure. you to get all the Fractured But Whole merchandise you can get.
Oh, yeah. Pre-order everywhere. Buy, yeah. buy the... Well, actually, I wanted to add... That was one thing that you just reminded me of. Fractured But Whole... Are you still... Do you ever, like... Are you ever talking with retailers or talking with people and you realize through the conversation that they still don't get the Fractured But Whole? Because I gotta be totally honest.
Mm.
It wasn't until I was talking with Nao maybe, like, months after the title was announced.
Yeah.
I never said anything, yeah. I did not...
Well, I guess that's one of those things where... When you hear it or when you say it.
I wasn't focusing on it. There were like a lot of announcements happening and E3 was happening. And I was like, oh, okay. It's like parodying superhero movies and okay. Da, da, da.
Yep.
But
Fractured. But Whole.
But Whole.
Right.
Yeah. But Whole.
No, it was funny because so every year...
there must be people still
go around
don't
to
get it.
No. We went around to retailers to show the product and get them excited for it. And there were a few meetings where as I'm going through the presentation, somebody goes, oh, that's terrible. And I'm like, what? What's going on? It's like, butthole. Like,
just got it.
Yeah. No, it actually happened. And then, like, you know, obviously the whole room's laughing at that point. Yeah, but it was like, oh, you finally, good. Yes. No, it's. Butthole. Yeah. Butthole. She's like, butthole. Oh, you guys.
You darn kids. Yeah, I mean, I think it happens all the time. We had a photographer covering E3 for Ubisoft in general, and he came by one of my demo rooms on the last day, and he's like, I just wanted to tell you that the title's brilliant because I've been here all week, and just this morning... It clicked. Oh, and he's like, I've been watching you do interviews. I've been because you roll it off as the Fractured But Whole, and it's like you just—it's so natural.
Yeah, you know,
I didn't notice.
Someone is going to be listening to this podcast and just be like,
"What?
Please tweet at us. Let us know if you just now got it. There's no shame in it. Some people didn't get Phoenix Down, JJ, until this year.
Wait, what?
Phoenix Down.
Yeah, you know,
Final Fantasies.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a phoenix feather that come back to
it's
life.
Like, and it's down like codes. Down. Yeah, like. Some people did not get that.
Oh.
They just thought like
phoenix down, the direction
like,
is down.
I mean, I didn't get it for years.
I thought you were saying it was something dirty. I was like, wait, what hidden, dirty Final Fantasy thing?
It wasn't until I like learned Japanese that I figured out what phoenix down was.
What is it? Do you want, what is in Japanese?
Like a down.
Is it in Japanese like down?
Well, that I don't know. Okay, right. But I just know that Japanese people
I thought you were playing that whole, like, oh, well, in the original Japanese...
I don't fucking play Final Fantasy, motherfucker.
It was this shit. All right.
I see.
That's a good note, probably, to...
the best note.
To end this on. Thank you, guys. For people who want to... We do, like, Twitter names and stuff like that, where people want to find more... Find out more. Read more about it at your local library, or go to
Nao Higo, NAOHIGO.
On Twitter, or?
Just go to South Park Game.
Oh. You're giving it up? Are you not on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter, but I rarely use it, so you're going to be like, oh my gosh, he didn't
Who's
write me personally. And
Even
I'll be
now,
like,
not in service of the game?
You should.
I have maybe dozens of Twitter followers out of this.
A whole dozen.
That is tens of hundreds of listeners of this show.
I love
who might
that CC and Dan
and like it. Yes. Who give it up for both. Give it up for the game and yourself.
What you're going to find me at Jeeves Godfrey.
Ooh, you don't have to spell that.
J-E-E-V-E-S. Godfrey is G-O-D-F-R-E-Y.
Oh, only one R. Okay.
Yep.
The game itself has its own Twitter account?
Well, you should always follow South Park.
Yes.
Itself, because they just tweet funny stuff. Mm-hmm. And just enjoy that. And then we're at the South Park game.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks, right. guys, for stopping by.
Ubisoft Studio SF.
That's right.
Of course.
We're hiring.
I mean, that goes without saying.
Also awesome. In Osaka, we're hiring.
Are you?
Yeah, absolutely. We're growing.
Growing on both studios.
Good to know. Good to know. Well, if you're listening and you're interested, check it out. Otherwise, stick around and we'll be back with the news.
Small town sounds quiet as night falls. Clouds hang high up in the sky like tight balls. Observed in silence by the hero that South Park deserves it. So clear that shit's about to get perverted. If you're of a sensitive disposition, you'd better avert your eyes. This noble coalition's only mission's shifting merchandise. A nipping a bit off the top of the profit as if they were circumcised. We like our gherkins sliced, supersized of burgers, fries, and milkshake. Our balls are touching in an epic way when worlds collide. Observe the humankind traverse the skies. Presumably carrying some sort of irreconcilable burden that hurts inside. Like when a person dies or a deflowered virgin cries. This work requires a certain type of individual who's willing to do things which impugn what is permissible. Speak the unthinkable even if it's unforgivable.
And we are back with the news. Oh my god. Is that the Star Fox 2 news sound?
Yes, that's Star Fox 2 news sound.
Promise we won't do that again, folks.
I mean, it's very different every time, right?
We Shop Channel. Yes, that's coming to an end. 2019.
That's kind of fucked up.
R.I.P.
January 30th, 2019. So basically like a year and a half. And this was announced by Nintendo saying all services related to the Wii Shop Channel, including re-downloaded purchased WiiWare, Virtual Console titles, and Wii Channel, as well as Wii System Transfer Tool, which transfers out of the Wii to the Wii U system. So basically...
everything that was WiiWare exclusive or that nature is just going to be gone now.
Yep. And you can't move
get it
to
back.
Your Wii U.
You can't move it to your Wii U. You can't
re-download
it.
It will stay there, and you can still play it. You just can't...
You just hope your Wii never breaks.
Exactly. So I'm kind of curious the aftermarket, you know...
Yeah.
We get into the collectible era where it's like, here is a Wii...
That has the entire Rebirth series on it.
Well, there's going to be one game for whatever reason, Nintendo or whoever never re-releases again. Yeah.
It's a Wii that only has Muscle March on it.
There's a lot of really good server like games on WiiWare that, I mean, I guess will just be gone forever. Because like Konami's entire Rebirth series, really good. Like Castlevania the Rebirth was a good game. Final Fantasy My Life as a King, Crystal Chronicles, that game was really good. There's a lot of really awesome games on that just never went anywhere else.
Right.
So
Nintendo could, especially now with the Switch, just say, I mean, they didn't with the Wii U, but I mean... was clearly not going to be worth it.
Yeah.
But with the Switch, it could be like, here's everything we've done so far. But, I mean, something's going to fall through the cracks.
Absolutely.
And some collector's going to have it on a fucking thing, and we're going to start to see Wiis with this on it.
We might like start to see like WiiWare emulators or whatever, just so that they can get those again. But
I wonder, I'm sure that they probably already have that.
There's a way to back them up, right?
And yeah, I hope so. I hope so, at least.
I mean, you can get into a Wii and take all that stuff out,
right? If you didn't update the like system past,
those games are on the internet.
Yeah, so that's I guess that's something that maybe I did see. I thought it was interesting. I did see people lamenting that they moved their Wii games to their Wii U.
Because the Wii output is much better than the Wii U.
Mm. Why? What?
So I think I'm kind of like talking out of my ass here, but I think it's like what it is. If you're on the regular Wii, you can use component cables. And so you have a perfect like 480p image that you can output. Uh-huh. Whereas if you put it on a Wii U, it gets scaled strangely because you're using a Wii U that is in Wii mode.
Okay, right.
So I mean, yes, you still have them and you have access to them, but the video display is wrong.
Okay. I thought it might be a controller thing or something like that, but that makes more sense.
But you've got like almost a year, right, to do this?
Yeah, but I don't think you can transfer it back from Wii U to Wii.
No, as soon as you transport something to Wii U, it is gone. You cannot transport it back. But you at least get that cute animation of the Pikmin moving it. But.
Could you get a new Wii and...
Yeah, and download stuff if you absolutely wanted to.
Re-download it?
Yeah. You could.
So this is your warning.
Once you transfer it to the Wii U, doesn't it say?
Yeah, it says. Well, I mean, you could get a new console and get a new account and then download things again.
And
if
buy
you
the wanted, games again.
If you needed to have Castlevania the Rebirth forever, you could do that.
What was the Rebirth?
The Rebirth was one. It was very much like Castlevania 3. It was like a multiple path classic Castlevania style game. Mm. It was really good.
What?
Yeah.
I had not heard of this.
It was really good. Yeah. Yeah, it was
like
Konami Shop. Yeah. It was like with their Gradius Rebirth and Contra Rebirth.
What?
They had a Rebirth series on WiiWare.
Who developed it?
Konami.
I mean, which team?
Oh, I'm not sure. I don't know that much. But it was really good. It was really good. But yeah, and also Sarah was 100% right. Best storefront music of all time.
Yes.
Yeah.
No argument there.
No question.
Now we have to put that in.
No
as
question.
Like the brand
Somewhere.
Music.
Oh, believe me, it's going to be all the music.
Wii owners can also still add Wii points, the shop's currency, until March 26, 2018. They're saying they'll, you know, spend all those points, re-download software, transfer the games, ASAP. Yeah, launched in 2006, so not too bad, 13 years.
Yeah.
I thought that it was, when I saw this, I was like, oh, I guess that's not already gone, huh?
Yeah, that was the, I was in that camp. Like, that didn't shut down already?
A lot of stuff.
I downloaded a lot of stuff.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, the whole Rebirth series is one. My Life as a King was one.
I'd be kind of pissed. I don't know if I would feel...
I mean, Virtual Console alone is like...
Yeah, there's a lot of games that on that never went to Wii U and will probably never come to Switch because who knows what they're doing with that.
It's sooner or later they have to do that. Speaking of ports, Neo coming to PC.
Cool.
Yeah, and soon too, right? When is the...
November.
The date on here somewhere.
I think they're
November
releasing 7th, it at the same time as like a PS4 complete edition with all the DLC or whatever. Yeah. Am I remembering that
so
right?
So does the PC one get all the DLC?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Okay. The PC version will be everything.
We so, it took them so long.
Neo complete.
Yeah, they made a shit ton of DLC. There were like three separate packs. So.
Well, also, it was like heavily, heavily, heavily promoted by Sony. So they had like a deal. I'm sure it was an exclusivity deal.
And that's
PC
great.
Version,
that's
great. Include two visual presentation modes. Action mode, which aims for a stable 60 frames a second. And movie mode, a quote-unquote cinematic
option.
This
is weird.
It's like 24 FPS
resolution.
Yeah. It's weird because it's on a PC. It's like... Just why have
let people?
You don't have modes.
Just let people choose.
Just uncap the frame rate.
And then go whatever.
Give us regular PC graphics options.
It will also include a new helmet, JJ.
Oh, because it has like a little valve on the front of it. It looks like a little.
It has a Steam logo.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
really
hilarious. Yeah. Thanks, by the way, to where we get the news from this week:
Polygon,
Kotaku, Gaff, wherever. Yeah. Unsung Story developer announces PS4, Switch, and Xbox One versions. So this is the perils of doing a Kickstarter in 2014 that's not just now getting rebooted. So basically, this is just a kind of an interesting story. I mean, there's lots of different ways to think about this, but basically, they looked at their backers and the rewards and some of the things that they were pledged to do and said just honestly, like, okay... For example, there's only 5 backers that are getting this special second T-shirt, so we're just not going to do that. They also... What were the bigger ones? 52 backers selected the Kindle version of the main game. And
like, what? 51
Why does... Yeah. Selected the Kindle version of the card game Windows Tablet.
Yeah.
Had equally low orders.
Like,
so,
when you see this stuff, it kind of makes sense that this game has not come out.
I mean, it also says that you're... I mean, your Kickstarter probably wasn't run super well in the first place if you're like, Kindle version of it. I mean, Kindle was... It's not like Kindle was a powerhouse in 2014 right. gaming platform. Mm. Only 50 people chose it. So, you know, these are some of the things that you might want to say, well, only if there's enough interest are we going to make this thing. But basically, you know, a lot of the attitude I've seen from people is like... It's better than nothing, which
I mean, if the game eventually comes out,
that'll be great. That'll be a miracle.
But that's it. Yeah, it's like, okay, well, I didn't kind of, a lot of people kind of given up on it. I didn't think I was getting a game. And so this other developer, now it's starting to make sense to me why they had this whole story of giving it to the other developer. Yeah. It's like, okay, now the other developer can come in like they're new and say, okay, we're going to do this, this, and this. It doesn't seem to make sense. I think there's something must be happening behind the scenes financially to make it worth their while.
Yeah.
Why this like new unproven IP was worth it for them to take on all this baggage instead of just making their own original game. But
I think all this stuff makes sense. Like, they're going in, they're cutting all the fat. They want to get the game out. And I think people, like, they even say that they're going to try and refund some of the people whose rewards are getting cut or whatever.
Yep. Going to give some limited refunds to make up for it. So,
shit just got to get done.
Yep. What's his name's not on it anymore, though, right?
Matsuno, but the story is still written. It's
his
still in there.
Design or whatever.
Matsuno, I'm sure whatever Matsuno did finished years ago.
Yeah.
Like, his part must be long done.
They go in.
He was the script writer, I think. So, yeah. I mean, he's.
The guy who. They were like, why did we pick this game? Because we are huge Matsuno fans.
Is that what they say? Okay.
It's going to be, like, still a Matsuno thing.
Does somebody give a shit about Sonic want to talk about the story? Because
I love Sonic. Sonic 3D Blast. If you hit the cart. A little stage select would show up
physically, like while you actually plugged in, shake your, just hit the cart
it.
In your while it's in
Smack
your Genesis.
It.
Yeah,
cool. But
why?
This was because they had to get around Genesis certification.
Okay,
and if you hit the game, it would just like bug out and stop.
So certification being when the platform holder tests your game.
Yeah, and see if it's authentic.
They do different things. They'll, like, unplug and plug back in the controller 50 times. They'll, like, maybe smack the unit. And it needs to pass all of these thresholds in order for it to be accepted and then released.
And so in order to pass all that, instead of... Well, they basically changed what would have been a, like, game-stopping bug when someone hits the cart. They turned it into a stage select to mask it and... They didn't even...
That's so this cool. programmer's idea was just to take things when these errors
That's
would
a cute
pop
idea.
Up,
Sonic 3D Blast is a really bad game.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
there's no...
It's a Sonic game.
No Chaos. Nothing to do for you, Sarah.
I thought this was sad. Former Square Enix employee arrested for allegedly stocking up game consoles for resale. Basically, this guy was a sales manager, and he would do contracts with different outlets and be like... You know, presumably, like, okay, if you're making the game, or I don't know if it was with first parties or with third parties, but okay, we're gonna need, you know, 10 switches or 20 switches or whatever, and then he was just selling them.
It's a good idea. Too bad he got arrested.
I guess he made like $12,000 out of it.
Was he in Japan?
Yeah, this is
he?
Square Enix Japan.
With like retail consoles?
Yeah,
presumably. Like not even dev kits.
No.
Because if he was working with a developer, they wouldn't want a retail console.
But
presumably.
That's what he got. Because he could sell them back to the stores.
It seems like that'd be pretty obvious, but okay.
PlayStation management shakeup. So friend of the show, Mr. Andrew House... is no longer president and CEO of Sony Interactive Entertainment. He is being replaced by a man named John Cordera. So Andrew House has been there for 27 years from the very first PlayStation.
Certified badass.
And really, yeah, he is the guy that...
He's the dude, like...
He's credited with four and bringing it back. And, I mean... I personally like a lot. I think a lot of good decisions, including some things that are I think very forward thinking, such as VR and things like that. Things that are not necessarily like no brainer. Like a lot about the PS4, you could say like, okay, that you're just listening to developers and whatever. Yeah. But like, you know, there's internal machinations. There's fights. The marketing. Remember the fucking marketing for
the
PS3?
Very different vibe from an Andrew House and a Mark Cerny. Like, when they're talking, you feel like they're saying different things.
Yeah, he also gets tons of props all the time from the Japanese audience, because, you know, he's totally...
His Japanese is impeccable.
...fluent in Japanese. So he's going to stay on as chairman just to oversee the transition. But yeah, no word into what is happening with him. But, man, he's been with Sony for forever.
Like 23 guys, years or something. Yeah.
27, I think.
Damn.
Is that right? Yeah, these guys who are with... in Sony high management have generally been there for forever and gone all over the place. The same with the John Cordera guy, has been there for a while, so hopefully it'll be in good hands. But so I've met him a few times and actually like talked with him at length, and like I'm really sad about this because he did know his shit. I mean, I'm hopefully the John Cordera guy, who I just don't know, is just as good and good in the same ways. But Andrew House definitely got the business. Like, it was just part of him. It was in his blood from the very first, you know, PlayStation. And so, like, you know, he had fucking awesome stories. He had seen everything. He kind of knew everyone. It was just totally
Kojima.
In his blood and his DNA. And, yeah, like, he made some really, I think, great decisions at the helm. So, all props to him. Pour one out. Be super
Rest
interested
in peace.
To see where he goes next. And in other Twitter news, Breath of the Wild, friend of the show, Matt Walker. Check out this thread if you haven't seen it already. But
it was on the last episode. You just never heard him.
Yes, that's right.
Because he was in the room.
Yes, that's right.
Very it was much, great, though. I got to talk to him.
Yeah. I didn't get to talk to him.
Very good friend of the show. Basically, he translated a bunch of... articles about a bunch of different CDEC talks, basically Japanese game GDC, Japanese Game Developer Conference, where a bunch of different Nintendo people talked about the different things about Breath of the Wild's development. And there's a lot of different stories that read different angles, but check Matt's Twitter. It's @gypsyotoko. for the original thread, because there's tons of good stuff there. Some of the more interesting bits that the debug tools were built right into the game.
Yeah.
So people were playing the game and you just see a sign and then you'd come up and it's like, okay, here's what the
it's like, we're working in this area. Or, yeah. Please do not touch.
Or kind that of stuff like that. The other thing about the triangles, like they used triangles as a basic shape to obfuscate things that they wanted you to see, but gradually. Mm-hmm. So, and also give the player a choice if they're going to go directly towards the goal and go over the mountain or kind of go around it, take a longer route. Mm-hmm. But yeah. As wherever you'd be going, since you'd be walking past triangles, things in the distance would be slowly revealed by the gradual edge of the triangle. Yep. Moving. And so, like, that's just, that was like, fuck, holy shit. Mm-hmm.
Like, these guys are operating on a completely different
holy
level.
Fuck, like, because, you know, you think, like, oh, okay, they had to have just an open world, and then you just put stuff in mm-hmm. there and space it out evenly, but there's a lot more to it that's going on, and why Breath of the Wild is so, like, addictive and hard to mm-hmm. put down.
For me, when I read the triangle thing, I was like, fuck, that's why there's so many fucking mountains. Right. Like, I'm always, I always feel like I'm climbing up something or walking around something.
Yep. It's also just interesting, and it makes things the ground uneven. And they talk about the, you know, using rectangles to just out and out block things, mm-hmm. things like trees and whatever. And so I just thought it was interesting how they approached this. You know, it was not like, it was very much like high level thinking. Like, and also the priorities and stuff that you would see in the distance, and how players, you know, they just knew from testing and watching people play. It's like, oh, okay. You know, if you see a skull, that mm-hmm. means that you're going to go and be into combat and whatever. Right. And if you see, like, this kind of tower, you're going to prioritize that over this looking castle.
They use size to lure the players in different directions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really interesting. And give the player lots of different options at any one time.
Man, just, but it was nice to read, like, how they used the Kurok seeds to kind of, like, reward you. Mm-hmm. Because you'd want to, like, climb up that triangle. Like, if you climb up that triangle, which is a lot harder than just going around it.
Right.
They always put, like, something there.
Right.
To even though after a while you're like, fuck, another croak. But when you first find it, you're like, yay, there's something here. I've been rewarded.
Yeah.
Like, because if there was nothing, it would be way worse than finding a croak, I think. So.
Yeah, I was thinking of that recently, just like...
In Xenoblade, like, they would always... Your reward would be a good view. And it would be like, mm-hmm. there would a banner would pop on the screen being like, you found a fucking good view. Right. Like, nice.
Yeah, I was thinking about that recently, though. I mean, with any open world game, but with Zelda, it struck me just because of the incredible size and vastness of it, and also the uniqueness of all the different places. Just like on a project management, like how do you even organize it to where it's like, okay, this area has all of these things have to be done, and like this corner of this swamp, like, is that done, or are we going to put like... How do you even organize that times, like, literally, like 20,000 or 30,000 little places that are kind of distinct little places?
It really makes you understand how incredible of an accomplishment it is. Because, like, I mean, even the fucking way they made the game seems like it's from outer space. Like, it just, like... What? Really? Mm-hmm.
And I don't associate Nintendo with like cutting edge tools and
like this is
design
Japan,
theory and stuff.
This is a Japanese game.
I associate them with like craftsmanship and like, oh, this doesn't feel right and I'm gonna just like intuit it, you know?
Yeah.
Or like, but this was so, especially having the dev tools in the game and prioritizing as they did people playing the game over and over and just playing. They've talked about that before. I think I was at a GDC talk, just how much people, right before the game came out, how much they had people playing the game all the time. Totally shows in the game, so props to them. They definitely took their time with it, but that is fascinating. Definitely check out Matt's Twitter, and while you're at it, check out all of our Twitters. Check out 8-4's Twitter. Where can people find us when they're not listening to us, JJ, if they want to read us?
They can find us at 8-4.jp. We also are on our second home, giantbomb.com. You can always find our NeoGAF thread. We have an official Twitter at 8-4play. Mine is SPRSK.
I'm at Mark MacD.
At Timely Howard.
At Sarah Pods.
At Kotori.
And John TV for John.
That's right. did real-time updates of pictures being taken in New
of
York.
Of his pins, of his alcohol, on the beach.
I was so mad. He was like, I'm in Hawaii, and I'm like, I'm going to get to see so many good pictures of Hawaii. And then it's like, here's me in a t-shirt. Yeah. And it's like in a mirror, and it's like some like right. old-ass.
Literally a t-shirt. Like t-shirts and his cups of alcohol with nothing else in it. Like, come on, John.
T-shirts in Hawaii, do not mix.
You're in the most beautiful place.
Right. And has weird priorities. Let's put it that way.
But John should be back next episode.
Yeah.
Excuse me. In 2 weeks. Thank you again to Nao and Jason.
Yes.
Our guests. Check out South Park Fractured But Whole. also, I wanted to plug Back in My Play came back very briefly with friend of the show Ryan Payton. Did you listen to that?
I have not listened to it yet. It's about Panzer Dragoon Zwei.
Panzer Dragoon Zwei and yeah, so
Saga, right?
Right, exactly.
Or just all of them, I guess.
Panzer Dragoon, but mostly RPG and what's it called in the
Orta?
The Xbox One.
Great game.
Really cool, very interesting interview. Not something you get a lot of other places. Interviews in Japanese, but yeah, friend of the show Ryan Payton did some translating. Cool. So check that out. It's also on the Camouflage podcast as well. There's like a little taste of it. But I think that's about it. So until 2 weeks from now, who wants to take us out?
I feel like I remember like on the Four Kids Kirby cartoon, there was an issue where they were like, Kirby's going to eat the entire planet.
Kirby will eat anything.
They triggered Kirby in some way, and he was going to eat the entire planet, and they had to stop him. And they partnered up with King Dedede just to stop Kirby from eating the entire planet.
All I know is like when I saw you beating up that tree earlier, I got Shadow of the Colossus vibes, where it's like this is an enemy that like does not deserve this, and I don't understand why we're doing it. You used to call me on my cell phone. Late night when you need my love. Call me on my cell phone. Late night when you need my love. And I know when your hotline bling, that you only mean one thing. I know when your hotline bling, that you only mean one thing. Ever since I left the city, you got a reputation for yourself now. Everybody knows and I feel left out. Girl, you got me down, you got me stressed out. Cause ever since I left the city, you started wearing less and going out more. Blessings of champagne out on the dance floor. Hanging with some girls I never seen before. You used to call me on my cell phone. Are you sweating? 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 Are you sweating?